A great bald eagle sits poised for a flight on a craggy mountaintop. A title appears, Republic Pictures, a subsidiary of Spelling Entertainment Group, Inc. Another title, Liberty Films presents, as a big bronze bell rings out.
Hello, I'm George Bush. I'm proud and happy to be the first president to describe a film for the visually challenged. The film I'm about to describe for the blind and vision impaired is It's a Wonderful Life. This process of audio description, called theater vision, was created by a blind woman, Helen Harris. This synchronized description with technology developed by Helen Harris for motion picture theaters allows this nation's over 30 million blind and visually impaired to enjoy the experience of going to the movies just like everybody else. Because of this idea of one blind woman, many people will hopefully have a more wonderful life.
Credits appear. Frank Capra's It's a Wonderful Life, starring James Stewart and Donna Reed, with Lionel Barrymore, Thomas Mitchell, and Henry Travers, and Beulah Bondi, Frank Phelan, Ward Bond, Gloria Graham, and H.B. Warner. Screenplay by Francis Goodrich, Albert Hackett, and Frank Capra. Musical score written and directed by Dmitry Tiomkin. This black and white motion picture was produced and directed by Frank Capra.
Snow drifts softly down over a sign reading, You are now in Bedford Falls. Voices are overheard from shops and houses decked in Yuletide trim.
I owe everything to George Bailey. Help him, dear father.
Joseph, Jesus, and Mary, help my friend, Mr. Bailey.
Help my son, George, tonight.
He never thinks about himself, God. That's why he's in trouble.
George is a good guy. Give him a break, God.
I love him, dear Lord. Watch over him tonight.
Please, God, something's the matter with Daddy. Please bring Daddy back.
The little girl's prayer rises up with the others into a black, star-filled sky, rising higher into the heavens toward two shimmering galaxies of stars. The galaxies pulse with light as voices emanate from them.
Hello, Joseph. Trouble?
Looks like we'll have to send someone down. A lot of people asking for help for a man named George Bailey.
George Bailey? Yes, tonight's his crucial night. You're right. We'll have to send someone down immediately. Whose turn is it?
That's why I came to see you, sir. It's that clockmaker's turn again.
Oh, Clarence hasn't got his wings yet, has he?
We've passed him up right along. Because, you know, sir, he's got the IQ of a rabbit.
Yes, but he's got the faith of a child. Simple. Joseph, send for Clarence.
A small shooting star darts across the sky, stopping between the two bright galaxies.
You sent for me, sir?
Yes, Clarence. A man down on Earth needs our help.
Splendid. Is he sick?
No, worse. He's discouraged. At exactly 10:45 p.m. Earth time, that man will be thinking seriously of throwing away God's greatest gift.
Oh, dear, dear, his life. Then I've only an hour to dress. What are they wearing now?
You will spend that hour getting acquainted with George Bailey.
Sir, if I should accomplish this mission, I mean, might I perhaps win my wings? I've been waiting for over 200 years now, sir, and people are beginning to talk.
What's that book you've got there?
Oh, The Adventures of Tom Sawyer.
Clarence, you do a good job with George Bailey, and you'll get your wings.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you.
Poor George. Sit down.
Sit down? What do we...
If you're going to help a man, you want to know something about him, don't you?
Well, naturally, of course.
Well, keep your eyes open. See the town?
Where? I don't see a thing.
Oh, I forgot. You haven't got your wings yet. Now, look, I'll help you out. Concentrate. Begin to see something?
Why, yes. This is amazing.
If you ever get your wings, you'll see all by yourself.
Oh, wonderful.
Amidst a group of snow-clad youngsters, one boy sits on the blade of a large shovel and sleds downhill onto a frozen pond.
That's your problem, George Bailey.
A boy?
That's him when he was 12, back in 1919. Something happens here you'll have to remember later on.
Another boy rides his shovel down the snowy hill and onto the ice. Third boy shoots downhill and spins onto the frozen pond. And then a fourth rides his shovel to the bottom.
Come on, Lanny! Here comes the scare baby, my kid brother, Harry Bailey!
I'm not scared!
A little boy of about 7 clambers onto the blade of his shovel and pushes off, waving his arms in the air for balance. Little Harry Bailey careens across the glassy pond. Gliding with 2 discarded shovels, he skids toward the far edge of the pond and plummets through the thin ice. Big brother George races to his rescue, plunging into the icy water to save him. The boys form a chain to pull the brothers to safety.
George saved his brother's life that day, but he caught a bad cold which infected his left ear. Cost him his hearing in that ear. It was weeks before he was able to go back to his after-school job at Old Man Gower's drugstore.
George and his pals walk downtown.
Who's that? A king?
That's Henry F. Potter, the richest and meanest man in the county.
The boys gawk at Potter's fancy horse-drawn carriage and then run for Gower's drugstore and push George inside. George walks to the cigar counter. He grasps the cigar lighter attached to the top of a humidor and closes his eyes.
Wish I had $1,000,000. Hot dog!
His wish seemingly granted, George whistles his way to the soda fountain.
Me, Mr. Gower, George Bailey.
You're late.
Yes, sir.
Behind the pharmacy window, old Mr. Gower tips a bottle to his lips. George ties on an apron as Violet, a pretty little blonde, climbs up next to dark-haired Mary.
Hello, George. Hello, Mary.
Hello, Violet. 2 cents worth of shoelaces?
She was here first. I'm still thinking.
Shoelaces?
Please, Georgie.
Violet smiles sweetly.
I like him.
You like every boy.
What's wrong with that?
Here you are.
Help me down?
Help you down?
George scowls at Violet, and she jumps down from the stool. As she passes, Mary makes a face and sticks out her tongue, and then turns to George behind the counter.
Made up your mind yet?
I'll take chocolate.
With coconuts?
I don't like coconuts.
You don't like coconuts? Say, Brainless, don't you know where coconuts come from? Look at here. From Tahiti, the Fiji Islands, the coral...
He displays a magazine.
A new magazine? I never saw it before.
Of course you never. Only us explorers can get it. I've been nominated for membership in the National Geographic Society.
George bends down. Mary leans toward his bad ear.
You can't hear on. George Bailey, I'll love you till the day I die.
I'm going out exploring someday. You watch. And I'm going to have a couple of harems. And maybe 3 or 4 wives. Wait and see.
Mary gazes adoringly at George as he goes about his work.
George! George!
Yes, sir?
You're not paid to be a canary.
No, sir.
Troubled by Mr. Gower's gruffness, George turns away and sees a telegram lying on the cash register. He picks it up and reads, "We regret to inform you that your son Robert died very suddenly this morning of influenza. Stop. Everything possible was done for his comfort. Stop. We await instructions from you. Stop. Edward Wellington, President, Hamerton College." Shocked, George hurries to the back room where Mr. Gower, looking feeble and disoriented, is preparing a prescription.
Mr. Gower, do you want something? Anything?
No.
Anything I can do back here?
He spills the capsules.
No. I'll get them, sir.
Take those capsules over to Mrs. Blaine. Just wait for them.
Yes, sir.
As George retrieves the spilled capsules, Mr. Gower, seeming almost in a stupor, shuffles to his chair and collapses into it. George looks at the large apothecary jar Mr. Gower had filled the capsules from. It's marked poison. Suddenly, George realizes what Mr. Gower has done. He's mistakenly filled the capsules with poison instead of the preparation he intended. George tentatively approaches Mr. Gower's chair.
They have the diphtheria there, haven't they, sir?
Yeah.
Is it a charge, sir?
Yes, charge.
Mr. Gower, I...
Get going!
Yes, sir.
Frightened, George hurries out. He puts on his cap and stares at the box of pills in his hand, not sure what to do. Looking up, he sees a sign on the wall that says, "Ask Dad, he knows." Brightening, he runs from the store, still in his apron, as Mary looks soulfully after him. Running down the street, he stops at a building marked Bailey Brothers Building and Loan Association. He dashes up the stairs, bursts into the office, and heads straight for his father's door, but is stopped short by his Uncle Billy.
There, Captain Cook. Where are you heading?
Got to see Pop, Uncle Billy.
Some other time, George.
It's important.
There's a squall in there. It's shaping up into a storm.
Uncle Billy, telephone.
Who is it?
Bank examiner.
Thank you.
Forgetful Uncle Billy.
Should have called him yesterday. Switch it inside.
Goes into another office to take this call as George slips into his father's office.
Well, you're begging. That's a whole lot of work.
Well, all I'm asking for is 30 days more. Huh? Just a minute, son. Just 30 short days. I'll dig up that $5,000 somehow.
Shut me up. Have you put any real pressure on these people of yours to pay those mortgages?
Time's up bad, Mr. Potter. A lot of these people are out of work.
Well, foreclosed.
I can't do that. These families have children.
Not my children.
But they're somebody's children, Mr. Potter.
Are you running a business or a charity ward?
Well, all right.
Not with my money.
Mr. Potter, what makes you such a hard-skulled character? You have no family, no children. You can't begin to spend all the money you've got.
Oh, I suppose I should give it to miserable failures like you and that idiot brother of yours to spend for me.
He's not a failure. You
George,
can't say that about my father.
George,
you're
George.
Not. You're the biggest man in town.
Run along.
Bigger than him.
Run along.
Bigger than everybody.
I'm better than an idea of the Baileys.
Don't let him say that about you, Pop.
All right, son. All right. Thanks. I'll talk to you tonight.
George's father ushers him gently from his office and closes the door. Suddenly, remembering the pills, George despairs and, with head hanging, returns to the drugstore to find Mr. Gower on the phone.
Why, that medicine should have been down an hour ago. It'd be over in 5 minutes for that.
Slurring and obviously inebriated, Mr. Gower confronts George.
What is Miss Blaine advising capsules?
Mr. Gower grabs George and yanks him into the back room.
Did you hear what I said?
Yes, sir.
What kind of tricks are you playing anyway?
Grabbing him, Mr. Gower slaps George on the side of his head. Blood runs from his bad ear.
Don't you know that boy's big sick?
You hear me? I'm still here.
You lazy loaf.
Mr. Gower, you don't know what you're doing. You put something wrong in those capsules. I know you're unhappy. You got the telegram and you're upset. You put something bad in those capsules. It wasn't your fault, Mr. Gower.
Shaking, he hands the capsules to Mr. Gower.
Just look and see what you did. Look at the bottle you took the powder from. It's poison, I tell you, it's poison. I know you feel bad.
Mr. Gower opens a capsule and puts a bit of the powder to his lips. And then, in horror, he reaches for George.
Oh. Don't hurt my sewer again!
Mr. Gower drops to his knees and embraces George tearfully.
Oh, Mr. Gower, I would never tell anyone. I know your feelings. I would have felt so good to die, I would.
As the scene changes to present day.
This cowhide, combination lock, fitted up with brushes, combs.
Nope. Look, Joe. Now look.
I want a big one.
The picture freezes.
What'd you stop it for?
I want you to take a good look at that face.
Who is it?
George Bailey.
Oh, you mean the kid that had his ear slapped back by the druggist?
That's the kid.
It's a good face. I like it. I like George Bailey. Tell me, did he ever tell anyone about the pills?
Not a soul.
Did he ever marry the girl? Did he ever go exploring?
Well, wait and see.
Big, see, I don't want one for one night. I want some for 1,000 in one night. With plenty of room here for labels from Italy and Baghdad, Samarkand. Great big, sir, but...
I see, a flying carpet, huh?
Yeah.
I don't suppose you'd like this old second-hand job, would you?
Ah, you're talking. Gee whiz, I could use that as a raft in case the boat sunk. How much this cost?
No charge.
George points to his left ear.
That's my trick ear, George. Sound like you said no charge.
That's right.
Joe tilts the big leather suitcase toward George.
What's my name doing out here?
A little present from old man Gower. Came down and picked it out himself.
He did? What do you know about that? My old boss.
What boat are you sailing on?
Well, I'm walking across on a cattle boat.
A cattle boat?
Okay, I like cars.
Suitcase in hand, George heads for Gower's drugstore. The soda fountain is packed with kids.
Never so much for the bag. It's exactly what I want.
Forget it.
Well, it's wonderful of you to think of.
The old humidor he used to wish on.
I wish I had $1,000,000.
George strides happily on down the street.
Get your sea legs yet?
Probably for us, eh, mister? Hey, send some of those picture postcards, will you?
Hey, George, don't take any punk nickels.
He waves up at Uncle Billy and then greets Ernie in his cab and Bert, the policeman.
Hi, Ernie. Hiya, George.
Hi, Bert.
George. Hey, I'm a rich tourist today. How about driving me home in style?
Hop in, Your Highness. And for the carriage trade, I put on my hat.
An attractive blonde woman in a flowered dress walks by.
Good afternoon, Mr. Bailey.
Hello, Violet. Hey, you look good. That's some dress you got on there.
That's all right. Well, I only wear it when I don't care how I look.
With a saucy smile, Violet fluffs her hair and walks on. George and Bert gawk over the top of the taxi, and Ernie cranes his neck out of the window to watch Violet swing down the street. Violet literally stops traffic as she passes by. George and Bert stand spellbound until Ernie finds his voice.
How would you like to...
Yes.
Want to come along, Bert? We'll show you the town.
No, thanks.
Bert checks his watch.
I'll go home and see what the wife's doing.
Ernie nods his approval.
Family man.
Chandelier sways over the Bailey's dining table.
George, Terry, you're shaking the house down. Stop it.
Oh, let them alone. I wish I was up there with them.
Well, Terry will tear his dinner suit. George!
That's why all children should be girls.
Well, if they were all girls, there wouldn't be any... Oh, never mind. George, Harry, come down to dinner this minute. Everything's getting cold, and you know how long we've been waiting for you.
George and Harry bound down the stairs and scoop their mother up between them. They carry her to the table and deposit her on their father's lap. He hugs her and kisses her hand.
Oh, you two idiots. George, sit down and have dinner.
I've eaten.
Well, aren't you going to finish dressing for your graduating party? Look at you.
I don't care. It's George's tux. Annie, my sweet, have you got those pies?
You lay a hand on me, I'll hit you with this broom.
Annie, I'm in love with you.
Harry chases Annie, the housekeeper, into the kitchen.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy, my last meal in the old Bailey boarding house.
Oh, my land, my blood pressure.
Pop, can I have the car? I've got to take over a lot of plates and things.
What plates?
Oh, Mom, I'm chairman of the Eats Committee. We only need a couple of dozen.
Oh, no, you don't, Harry. Now, not my best handler.
Oh,
no,
let him have the plates, will there?
Hope you have a good trip, George. Uncle Billy and I are going to miss you.
I'll miss you too, Pop. What's the matter? You look tired.
Oh, I had another tussle with Potter today. Uh-huh. I thought when we put him on the board of directors, he'd ease up on us a little bit.
Well, what's eating that old money-grubbing buzzard anyway?
Oh, he's a sick man. Frustrated, sick in his mind, sick in his soul, if he has one. He hates everybody that has anything that he can't have. Hates us mostly, I guess.
Yeah. Harry balances a pie on his head and one in each hand.
Oh, you got a match?
Very funny, very funny.
Put those things in the car and I'll get your time studs ready for you. Now, hurry up.
Okay, Mom.
Now,
you coming later?
Drop one of them.
You coming later, George?
What do you mean? I'd be bored to death?
Wouldn't want a better death. Lots of pretty girls. We're going to use that new floor tonight, too.
Oh, good work.
No gin tonight, son.
Oh, Pop, just a little?
No, son, not one drop.
Boys and girls and music. Why do they need gin?
Well, did I act like that when I graduated from high school?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, George, I wish we could send Harry to college with you. Your mother and I talked it over half the night.
Mm. We have that all figured out. See, Harry will take my job in the building alone, work there for 4 years, then he'll go. Hmm.
Pretty young for that job.
Well, no younger than I was.
Well, you were born older, George.
George leans towards his father.
How's that?
I say you were born older. I suppose you've decided what you want to do when you get out of college.
Oh, well, you know what I've always talked about. Build things, design new buildings, plan modern cities, all that stuff I've been talking
about. Still after that first million before you're 30, huh?
No, I'll sell for half that in cash.
Annie serves coffee.
Of course, it's just a hope, but you wouldn't consider coming back to the building alone, would you?
Then lingers behind George's shoulder to hear his reply.
Well,
George looks over his shoulder and up at Annie.
Well, Annie, why don't you draw up a chair? Then you'd be more comfortable and you could hear everything that's going on.
I would if I thought I'd hear anything worth listening to.
George winks at his father as Annie leaves.
I know it's soon to talk about it.
No, not Pop. I couldn't. I couldn't face being cooped up for the rest of my life in a shabby little office. I'm sorry, Pop. I didn't mean that. It's this business of nickels and dimes and spending all your life trying to figure out how to save 3 cents in a length of pipe. I'd go crazy. I want to do something big and something important.
You know, George, I feel that in a small way we are doing something important. It's satisfying a fundamental urge. It's been the race for a man to want his own roof and walls and fireplace. And we're helping him get those things in our shabby little office.
I know, Pop. I know that. I wish I felt that. I've been hoarding pennies like a miser here in order to... Most of my friends have already finished college. I just feel like if I didn't get away, I'd bust.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. You're right, son.
You see what I mean, don't you, Pop?
This town is no place for any man unless he's willing to crawl to Potter. Now, you've got talent, son. I've seen it. You get yourself an education and get out of here.
George looks solemn as he leans toward his father.
Pop, you want a shock? I think you're a great guy.
Mr. Bailey smiles as George, a bit flustered, looks towards the kitchen door.
Boy, did you hear that, Annie?
I heard it. It's about time one of you lunkheads said it.
I'm going to miss old Annie.
Looking suddenly emotional, George pushes back from the table.
Pop, I think I'll get dressed and go over to Harry's party.
In the school gymnasium, a huge banner proclaims, Bedford Falls High School, class of 1928. Among the crowd of students and faculty attired in tuxedos and party dresses, George finds Harry.
Oh, Sam Wainwright. How are you? When'd you get here?
law this afternoon. I thought I'd give the kids a treat.
Old college graduate now.
Yeah, old Joe College Wainwright, they call me. Well, freshman, looks like you're going to make it after all, huh? Hey, Harry, you're the
Hello,
guy
Sam.
I want to see. The coach has heard all about you.
He has?
Yeah, he's followed every game, and his mouth's watering. He wants me to find out if you're going to come along with us.
Yeah, well, I got to make some dough first.
Well, you better make it fast. We need great ends like you. Not broken down old guys like this one, huh?
Sam elbows George playfully.
Welcome back.
Oh, McBartery Dowling. Putting a pool under this tower is a great idea. Saved us another building. Now, Sam, have a lot of fun. It's all just there evening. A lot of pretty girls around.
Violet appears, waving her dance card at George.
Hello, Violet.
Hello. What am I being?
George. Marty! Well, it's all homework.
Marty!
Sam, Harry,
good to see you.
Do me a favor, will you, George?
What's that?
Will you remember my kid sister, Mary?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm going to want you, Marty. Marty.
Dance with her, will you?
Oh, me? Oh, I feel funny enough already with all these kids.
Oh, come on, be a sport. Just dance with her one time and you'll give her the thrill of her life. Hey, Sam!
Oh, go ahead. Don't be long, Marty. I'm not being one for a second.
George stops mid-sentence as he sees Mary, the same little brunette who used to frequent Gower's drugstore, now all grown up and beautiful. Mary doesn't hear a word the young man is saying as she and George gaze at each other across the room.
Whoever it was, because it'd be scared. They know what kind of a guy I am.
You remember George. This is Mary. Well, I'll be seeing you.
Well.
Now, to get back to my story.
Still gazing at George, Mary hands the young man her punch cup as George encircles her waist.
It's my dance.
Oh, why don't you stop annoying
me? Well, I'm sorry. Hey!
The young man glares indignantly as George sweeps Mary onto the dance floor.
Hello.
Hello. You look at me as if you didn't know me.
Well, I don't.
You pass me on the street almost every day.
Me? Mm-hmm. Ah, that's a little girl named Mary Hatch.
Harry steps up to the microphone.
Oh, yes, the big Charleston contest. The prize, a genuine loving cup. Those not tapped by the judges will remain on the floor. Let's go.
The cheering crowd grab partners and break into a spirited Charleston. George and Mary stand in the midst of the lively dancers, looking at one another awkwardly.
I'm not very good at this.
Neither am I.
Okay, what did we lose?
George and Mary begin tentatively, then begin to step up their tempo a bit as they watch the other dancers jumping and swiveling to the music.
Hey, you're wonderful!
Gaining confidence, George and Mary try fancier steps. Mary's ruffled white dress moves prettily as she twirls, and with George, tall and slender in his black tuxedo, they make a most handsome couple. Across the floor, Sam Wainwright frolics with Violet, who wears a slinky, short satin dress. Growing bolder still, George crosses his hands over his knees, flexing them in and out in a traditional Charleston move as Mary circles him, bouncing and clapping. The young man, whom Mary spurned, watches the dancers glumly as Marty approaches.
What's the matter, Othello? Jealous? Did you know there's a swimming pool under this floor? And did you know that button behind you causes this floor to open up? And did you further know George Bailey is dancing right over that crack.
The young man looks hopeful.
I've got the key.
Then decisive, he takes the key, peers around, then with a nod and a smile at Marty, turns and fits the key into the lock. Now in full swing, George and Mary are unaware that the floor is opening up. They dance with abandon, their back to the widening crack. Seeing the peril, the other dancers move off to the sideline, yelling and clapping. Now, in the spotlight, George and Mary grow bolder, thinking the crowd is cheering them on. Grinning happily, George and Mary pour on the fancy footwork as behind them the floor opens wider and wider, revealing the swimming pool beneath. Side by side, holding hands, they perform their hearts out, moving ever backward with fancy twisting motions and dance themselves over the edge and into the pool. As the crowd screams and runs to the edge, George grabs Mary and continues dancing in the water. Spurred by the wet couple's spirit, other couples leap and dive into the pool to join the water dance. Marty and the young man who turned the key look at one another bewildered and then shrug and jump into the pool as more and more couples follow suit. The school faculty stands by looking horrified, and the school principal, completely perplexed and flustered, throws up his hands and dives in. Mary, in a terry cloth robe with the letters BFHS stamped on the back, and George, in the football uniform, walk home by the light of the moon.
Dance by the light. Oh.
dog, just like an organ.
Beautiful.
I told Harry I thought I'd be bored to death.
You should have seen the commotion in that locker room. I had to knock down three people to get this stuff we're wearing here. Let me hold that old wet dress of yours.
Do I look as funny as you do?
I guess I'm not quite the football type. You look wonderful.
Mary nods.
You know, if it wasn't me talking, I'd say you were the prettiest girl in town.
Mary looks up at him thoughtfully.
Well, why don't you say it?
I don't know. Maybe I will say it. How old are you anyway?
Mary stops on the sidewalk and turns to George.
18.
18? It was only last year you were 17.
Too young or too old?
Oh, no. Just right. Your age fits you. Sir, you look a little older without your clothes on. Without a dress, you look older.
Flustered, he steps on the belt of her robe.
Uh-oh. Oh, I'm on the way here.
Sir, by train, please.
A pox upon me for a clumsy lout. Your caboose, me lady.
He drapes the belt over her outstretched arm.
May kiss my hand.
He takes her hand in mock gallantry.
Hey.
And then suddenly grows serious and moves close to her.
Hey, Mary.
With a sidelong glance, she turns and moves off. George gazes after her, then stoops and picks up a rock.
Okay, then I'll throw a rock at the old Granville house.
Oh, no, don't. I love that old house.
No, you see, you make a wish and then try and break some glass in. You got to be a pretty good shot nowadays, too.
George, don't. It's full of romance, that old place. I'd like to live in it.
In that place?
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't live in it as a ghost. Now watch. It's right in the second floor there, see?
As Mary studies the once grand old mansion, George hits his mark.
What'd you wish, George?
Well, not just one wish, a whole hatful. Mary, I know what I'm going to do tomorrow and the next day and next year and a year after that. I'm shaking the dust of this crummy little town off my feet and I'm going to see the world. Italy, Greece, the Parthenon, the Colosseum. Then I'm coming back here and go to college and see what they know. And then I'm going to build things. I'm going to build airfields. I'm going to build skyscrapers 100 stories high. I'm going to build bridges a mile long. Were you going to throw a rock?
Looking quite determined, Mary takes aim. Then smiles, satisfied.
Hey, that's pretty good. What'd you wish, Mary?
With a coy smile, she turns and strolls away as a curious neighbor peers out from his porch.
Can't you come out tonight? Can't you come out tonight? Can't you come out tonight? Buffalo girls, can't you come out tonight?
Dance by the light of the moon. What'd you wish when you threw that rock?
Oh, no.
Come on, tell me.
If I don't, it might not come true.
What is it you want, Mary? What do you want? You want the moon? Just say the word and I'll throw a lasso around it and pull it down. Hey, that's a pretty good idea. I'll give you the moon, Mary.
I'll take it. Then what?
Well, then you could swallow it. And it'd all dissolve, see? And the moonbeams would shoot out of your fingers and your toes and the ends of your hair. Am I talking too much?
Yes.
The man on the porch startles them.
Why don't you kiss her instead of talking at her desk?
How's that?
Why don't you kiss her instead of talking at her desk?
George squints up at the man as if not comprehending his words.
Want me to kiss her, huh?
Oh, youth is wasted on the wrong people.
The man stomps off into the house.
Hey, hold on. Hey, mister, come on back out here. I'll show you some kissing. We'll put hair back on your head. What are you...
Startled, Mary bolts, unaware that George is standing on the belt attached to her robe. George turns to find Mary gone and her robe lying on the sidewalk in a heap.
Mary?
George stares down at the empty robe, then picks it up, looking puzzled.
Okay, I give up. Where are you?
Over here, in the hydrangea bushes.
Mary's eyes peer out of a large flowering bush. George starts to toss the robe.
What am I doing?
Then reconsiders, eyeing the robe slyly.
This is a very interesting situation.
Please give me my robe.
A hand pops up through the top of the hydrangea bush.
Man doesn't get in a situation like this every day.
I'd like to have my robe.
Not in Bedford Falls, anyway.
Ouch! Oh!
Gesundheit.
George,
it requires a little thought here.
Give me my robe.
I've read about things like this, but I never...
Shame on you. I'm going to tell your mother on you.
Well, my mother's way up in the corner there.
The bush begins to shake furiously.
I'll call the police.
And they're way downtown. They'd be on my side, too.
Then I'm going to scream.
Maybe I could sell tickets. No. Let's see. No, that. The point is, in order to get this robe... I've got it. I'll make a deal with you, Mary.
A car careens around the corner and pulls up to the curb. It's Harry and Uncle Billy. George tosses her the robe.
Come on home, quick. Your father's had a stroke.
Mary, I'm sorry. I've got to go.
Come on, George, let's hurry.
You got a doctor?
Yeah.
Kendall's there now.
The car speeds away. Wrapped once again in a robe, Mary watches sadly as the car disappears into the dark. Months later, at the offices of Bailey Brothers.
I know you're anxious to make a train.
I have a taxi waiting downstairs.
I want the board to know that George gave up his trip to Europe to help straighten things out here these past few months. Good luck to you at school, George.
Good luck, George. Good night. Good luck, George.
Now we come to the real purpose of this meeting. To appoint a successor to our dear friend, Peter Bailey.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to get to my real purpose.
Wait just a minute now.
Wait for what? I claim this institution is not necessary to this town. Therefore, Mr. Chairman, I make a motion to dissolve this institution and turn its assets and liabilities over to the receiver.
What are you, dirty conservative? I'll ring his neck, sir. George, did you hear what happened?
It's too soon after Peter Bailey's death to talk about chloroforming the building and loan.
Peter Bailey died 3 months ago. I second Mr. Potter's motion. Very well. In that case, I'll ask the two executive officers to withdraw. But before you go, I'm sure the whole board wishes to express its deep sorrow at the passing of Peter Bailey.
Thank you.
It was his faith and devotion that are responsible for this organization.
I'll go further than that. I'll say that to the public, Peter Bailey was the building and loan.
Oh, that's fine, Potter, coming from you, considering that you probably drove him to his grave.
Peter Bailey was not a businessman. That's what killed him. Oh, I don't mean any disrespect to him, God rest his soul. He was a man of high ideals, so-called. But ideals without common sense can ruin this town. Now, you take this loan here to Ernie Bishop. You know, that fellow that sits around all day on his brains in his taxi, you know. I happen to know the bank turned down this loan. But he comes here, and we're building him a house worth $5,000. Why?
Well, I handled that, Mr. Potter. You have all the papers there, his salary, insurance. I can personally vouch for his character.
Friend of yours?
Yes, sir.
You see, if you shoot pool with some employee here, you can come and borrow money. What does that get us? A discontented, lazy rabble instead of a thrifty working class. And all because a few starry-eyed dreamers like Peter Bailey stir them up and fill their head with a lot of impossible ideas. Now, I say...
Just a minute now. Hold on, Mr. Potter. Just a minute. Now, you're right when you say my father was no businessman. I know that. Why he ever started this cheap penny-ante building alone, I'll never know, but... Neither you nor anybody else can say anything against his character because his whole life was... Why, in the 25 years since he and Uncle Billy started this thing, he never once thought of himself. Isn't that right, Uncle Billy? He didn't save enough money to send Harry to school, let alone me. But he did help a few people get out of your slums, Mr. Potter. And what's wrong with that? Well, here, you're all businessmen here. Don't it make them better citizens? Doesn't it make them better customers? You said that they... What'd you say just a minute ago? They had to wait and save their money before they even thought of a decent home? Wait? Wait for what? Until their children grow up and leave them? Until they're so old and broken down that they... Do you know how long it takes a working man to save $5,000? Just remember this, Mr. Potter, that this rabble you're talking about, they do most of the working and paying and living and dying in this community. Well, is it too much to have them work and pay and live and die in a couple of decent rooms and a bath? Anyway, my father didn't think so. People were human beings to him, but to you, a warped, frustrated old man, they're cattle. Well, in my book, he died a much richer man than you'll ever be.
I'm not interested in your book. I'm talking about the building and loan.
I know very well what you're talking about. You're talking about something you can't get your fingers on, and it's galling you. That's what you're talking about, I know. Well, I've said too much. You're the board here. You do what you want with this thing. There's just one thing more, though. This town needs this measly one-horse institution, if only to have some place where people can come without crawling to Potter. Come on.
George, wearing a black mourning band around the arm of his suit coat, leaves the boardroom, followed by Uncle Billy.
Sentimental hogwash. I want my motion acted on.
Boy, oh boy, that was... Tell him, George, oh boy, you shut his big mouth. You should have heard him.
What happened? We heard a lot of yelling.
Well, we're being voted out of business after 25 years. Oh. Easy come, easy go.
Here it is. Help wanted. Female.
You still want me to hang around, George?
Yeah, I'll be right down.
Yeah, hey, you miss your train. You're a week late for school already. Go on.
What's going on?
Oh, never mind. Don't worry about that. They're putting us out of business. So what? I can get another job. I'm only 55.
56.
Go on, go on. Hey, look, you gave up your boat trip. Now you don't want to miss college too, do you?
George, they voted Potter down. What? They want to keep it going.
Hey!
George, you did it. They got one condition. Huh? Only one condition.
What's that?
And that's the best part of it. They've appointed George here as executive secretary to take his father's place.
Oh, no, but Uncle Billy is...
You can keep him on, that's all right. As secretary, you can hire anyone you like.
Dr. Kamenow, let's get this thing straight. I'm leaving right now. I'm going to school. This is my last chance. Uncle Billy here, he's your man.
But George, they'll vote with Potter otherwise.
As George stops at the door, a star pulses in the heavens.
I know. He didn't go.
That's right. Not only that, but he gave his school money to his brother Harry and sent him to college. Harry became a football star, made second team All-American.
Yeah. But what happened to George?
George got 4 years older waiting for Harry to come back and take over the building and loans.
Now, there are plenty of jobs around if somebody likes to travel. Look at this here. Venezuela oil fields. Wanted, man with construction experience. Here's the Yukon. What, right here. Wanted, man with engineering experience. There she blows. You know what the three most exciting sounds in the world are?
Breakfast is served, lunch is served, dinner.
No. Anchor chains, plane motors, and train whistle.
Peanut.
His brother Harry steps off the train.
Old Professor Phi Beta Kappa.
George Geographic Explorer Bailey.
What?
No, George, no sleds. Uncle Billy, I haven't changed a bit.
Nobody ever changes here, you know that.
I'm glad to see you.
Say, where's Mother?
She's home cooking the fatted calf. Come on, let's go.
Oh, wait a minute.
George?
Uncle Billy? I want you to meet Ruth.
Hello.
How do you do? Ruth Dakin.
Ruth Dakin Bailey, if you don't mind.
That's right. Well, I wired you. I had a surprise. Here she is. Meet the wife.
George looks stunned.
You. Wife.
How do you do? Congratulations.
What am I doing?
George kisses Ruth's cheek.
Harry, you
married these two. Why don't you tell somebody?
Nobody tells me.
You're
really married?
Why, what's a pretty girl like you doing marrying this two-headed brother of mine?
Well, I'll tell you, it's purely mercenary. My father offered him a job.
Oh, he got you and the job. Well, Harry's cup running over.
George, about that job. Bruce spoke out of turn. I never said I'd take it. You've been holding the bag here for 4 years, and... Well, I won't let you down, George. I would like to... Wait a minute. I forgot the bags. I'll be right back.
George looks dazed. With a look of frustration, his chances for freedom slipping away. Uncle Billy regales Ruth with family lore as George approaches them slowly, trying to gather his composure.
And I want to tell you that we're going to give the biggest party this town ever saw.
I want
you to come to you.
Harry, I'll be right here. How are you?
Good. George. That's all Harry ever talks about.
What about this job?
Oh, well, my father owns a glass factory in Buffalo. He wants to get Harry started in the research business.
Yeah, well, is it a good job?
Oh, yes, very. Not much money, but a good future, you know.
Yeah.
Harry's a genius at research. My father just fell in love with him.
Celebration at the Baileys. George and a rather tipsy Uncle Billy linger on the front porch as the others file inside.
Hey, Joe! Boy, I feel so good, I could spit in Potter's eye.
I think I will.
What'd you say? Huh? No, maybe I better go home. Where's my hat? Oh, thank you, George. This is mine.
The metal one.
Oh, thank you, George. Oh, boy. Now, look, if you point me in the right direction, would you do that, George?
Right down.
Old building and lone pal, huh?
Now, you just turn this way, and then right straight down there.
Well, that way, huh? My wild Irish road. I'm all right.
Chuckling, George walks to the porch. Inside, family and friends talk and laugh together. George lights a cigarette, walks to the gate, and leans on the fence post, looking pensive. The sound of the train whistle far off in the distance causes him to look up, his eyes full of melancholy. He reaches in his breast pocket and pulls out a handful of travel brochures. South America, Europe, travel with the Student Tours Travel Club. He leafs through them slowly and then with a brooding look, throws him to the ground. George's mother approaches quietly.
Oh, hello, Mom.
She reaches up and kisses him.
Oh, that's for nothing. How do you like her?
Oh, she's swell, isn't she?
Looks like she can keep Harry on his toes.
Keep him out of Bedford Falls, anyway.
Mrs. Bailey looks away with concern.
Did you know that Mary Hatch is back from school?
Mm-hmm.
Came back 3 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
Nice girl, Mary.
Mm-hmm.
Kind that'll help you find the answers, George.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, stop that grunting.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give me one good reason why you shouldn't call on Mary?
Sure, Sam Wainwright.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Sam's crazy about Mary.
Oh, she's not crazy about him.
Well, how do you know? Now, would she discuss it with him?
No.
Well, then how do you know?
Well, I've got eyes, haven't I? She lights up like a firefly whenever you're around.
Oh.
Besides, Sam Wainwright's away in New York, and you're here in Bedford Falls.
And all's fair in love and war.
Oh, I don't know about war.
He hugs his mother warmly.
Mother mine, I can see right through you, right to your back collarbone. Trying to get rid of me, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Gives him another kiss, places his hat on his head.
Well, here's your hat. What's your hurry? All right, mother old building and loan pal. I think I'll go out and find a girl and do a little passionate necking. Now, if you'll just point me in the right direction.
She takes his shoulders and points him down the sidewalk.
This direction.
Then gives him a gentle shove. He walks a few steps and then turns around. Returning, he tips his hat as he walks past his mother.
Good night, Mrs. Bailey.
Mrs. Bailey's concern is evident as she watches her son walk away. George strolls aimlessly downtown. Crossing the street, he sees Violet leaving a nightclub with two young men. She spots George and beams.
Excuse me.
Oh, wait a minute.
I think I got a date. But stick around, fellas, just in case, huh?
We'll wait for you, baby.
Violet skips across the street and hurries up to George.
Hello, George, of course.
What?
What give?
She takes his arm.
Where are you going?
Oh, I'm probably end up down at the library.
Georgie, don't you ever get tired of just reading about things?
He looks thoughtful.
Yes. What are you doing tonight?
Nothing.
She smiles seductively.
Your game, Vi? Let's make a night of it.
Oh, I'd love it, Georgie. What do we do?
Let's go out in the fields and take off our shoes and walk through the grass.
Huh?
Then we can go up to the falls. It's beautiful up there in the moonlight. And there's a green pool up there, and we can swim in it. Then we can climb Mount Bedford and smell the pines and watch the sunrise against the peaks, and we'll stay up there the whole night, and everybody will be talking. There'll be a terrific scamp.
George, what about... have you gone crazy? Why, walking the grass in my bare feet?
The crowd is gathered behind George.
Oh, 10 miles up to Mount Bedford.
Okay, just forget about the whole thing.
George ambles down the sidewalk, tapping the picket fences idly with a stick. He stops in front of a mailbox marked Mrs. J.W. Hatch. He gives it a whack, then saunters slowly down the sidewalk and stops at the gate. A voice calls from an upper window.
What are you doing? Picketing?
Oh, Mary. I just happened to be passing by.
Yes, so I noticed. Have you made up your mind?
How's that?
Have you made up your mind?
About what?
About coming in. Your mother just phoned and said you were on your way over to pay me a visit.
My mother just called you? Well, how'd she know?
Didn't you tell her?
I didn't tell anybody. I just went for a walk. I happened to be passing by here.
Mary disappears from the window.
Went for a walk, that's all.
And fairly flies down the stairs.
I'll be downstairs, Mother.
All right, dear.
She stops to check her hair in the mirror and then smiles and runs to the living room. On the music stand, she places a picture of a young man roping the moon with a caption reading, George lassos the moon. She pats it fondly, then runs to the Victrola in the hall and puts on a record. She throws open the door to find George still standing outside the gate.
Well, are you coming in or aren't you?
Well, come in for a minute.
Stick in hand, George reaches over the gate to open the latch. It's stuck, and George rattles it impatiently and then rears back and kicks the gate open with his foot.
I didn't tell anybody I was coming over here, you know.
Mary just smiles at him sweetly.
When'd you get back?
Tuesday.
Where'd you get that dress?
Do you like it?
All right.
Trying very hard to look nonchalant, he strolls inside and eyes the Victrola.
I thought you'd go back to New York like Sam and Angie and the rest of them.
Closing the door, Mary smiles up at him.
Oh, I worked there a couple of vacations, but I don't know. I guess I was homesick.
Homesick? For Bedford Falls?
Yes. My family and everything. Would you like to sit down?
All right, for a minute. I still can't understand it, though. You know, I didn't tell anybody I was coming here.
Would you rather leave?
No, I don't want to be rude.
Well, then, sit down.
What's that?
George bends over the sketch of him lassoing the moon.
Some joke, huh?
As Mary watches hopefully, George ambles to the sofa and plops down, sighing. Mary sits next to him.
Well, see, it still smells like pine needles around here.
Thank you.
Mary tries to ignore his sour mood as George, feigning boredom, twirls his hat in his hands. Smiling, she leans toward him.
Dance by the...
What's the matter?
Then pulls back, hurt.
Oh, yeah.
He pretends to have forgotten their shared duet, then deliberately checks his watch.
Nice about your brother Harry and Ruth, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's all right.
Don't you like her?
Well, of course I like her. She's a peach.
Oh, just... marriage in general you're not enthusiastic about,
huh? No, marriage is all right for Harry and Marty and Sam and you.
Mary, who's down there with you?
It's George Bailey, Mother.
George Bailey? What's he want?
I don't know. What do you want?
George raises his eyebrows.
Me? Not a thing. I just came in to get warm.
George tosses his hat on the coffee table and gets up from the sofa.
He's making violent love to me, Mother.
You tell him to go right back home, and don't you leave the house either. Sam Wainwright promised to call you from New York tonight.
What's your mother mean? You know, I didn't come here to...
What did you come here for, then?
I don't know. You tell me. You're supposed to be the one that has all the answers. You tell me.
Why don't you go home?
That's where I'm going. I don't know why I came here in the first place. Good night.
Good night.
Mary, the telephone is Sam.
I'll get it.
Whatever were you doing? It's good to hear.
Mary trudges sullenly to the Victrola, takes off the record, and smashes it against the cabinet. Then puts her hand to her forehead, upset.
Mary, he's waiting.
She moves woodenly to the phone and picks it up.
Hello?
George reappears at the door.
Forgot my hat.
Revitalized, Mary turns to the phone and pours on the charm.
Hello, Sam. How are you? Oh, well, that's awfully sweet of you, Sam. There's an old friend of yours here, George Bailey.
You mean old Mossback George?
Yes, old Mossback George.
Yeehaw, put him on.
Well, just a minute, I'll call him George.
He doesn't want to speak to George, you idiot.
He does so, he asked for him. George
walks up behind
George,
her.
George, Sam wants to speak to you.
Mrs. Hatch huffs up the stairs as Mary brushes away a tear.
Hi, Sam.
Well, George Bailiofsky. Hey, a fine pal you are. What are you trying to do, steal my girl?
Oh, well, what do you mean? Nobody's trying to steal anybody's girl. Here's Mary.
Wait a minute. I want to talk to her.
Here, you...
Tell Mary to get on the extension.
You talk.
Mother's on the extension. I am not. We can both hear. Come here.
She leans in close to George.
We're listening, Sam.
Well, look, I have a big deal coming up that's going to make us all rich. George, do you remember that night in Martini's bar when... about making plastics out of soybeans.
With Mary's head against his, George seems to be losing his composure. He moves even closer, smelling the perfume of her hair.
Soybeans, yeah.
Mary's forehead almost touches George's lips. He struggles to concentrate as Sam jabbers on.
Rochester? Well, why Rochester?
Well, why not? Can you think of anything better?
Well, I don't know. Just, why not right here? You remember that old tool and machinery works? You tell your father you can get that for a song, and all the labor he wants, too. Half the town was thrown out of work when they closed down.
Was that so? Well, I'll tell him. Hey, that sounds great. Baby, I knew you'd come through. Now, here's the point. Mary, you're in on this, too. Now, listen. Have you got any money?
Mary, nearness stirs him even more.
Money? Yeah. Well, a little.
Well, now, listen. I want you to put every cent you've got into our stock. Do you hear? George, I may have a job for you. That is, unless you're still married to that broken-down building and loan.
George moves his lips closer to Mary's forehead.
Since radio, and I'm letting you in on the ground floor. Oh, Mary. Mary.
Well, I'm here.
George slowly lowers the phone, looking down at her.
Giving him the chance of a lifetime, do you hear? The chance of a lifetime.
Trembling, Mary tilts her face up to his.
He says it's the chance of a lifetime.
The tortured expression, George drops the phone and draws her into his arms.
Now, you listen to me. I don't want any plastics, and I don't want any ground floors, and I don't want to get married ever to anyone. You understand that? I want to do what I want to do. And you're...
They cling to each other, both sobbing with emotion.
George.
Covers her face with kisses. Mrs. Hatch, who's been spying from the landing, runs upstairs. In the Bailey household, Mary and George run down the stairs under a bower of flowers. Wearing a corsage pinned to the shoulder of her going-away suit, Mary tosses her bridal bouquet, and she and George duck showers of rice as they run for the front porch. Outside, umbrellas pop up as real showers come down. They pause on the porch and kiss, and then run for the car under the shelter of an umbrella held by George's pal Ernie, the cab driver. Violet, who's caught the bouquet, stands on the porch with a weeping Mrs. Hatch and Mrs. Bailey, who waves happily as the newlyweds depart. A big Just Married sign adorns the back of Ernie's taxi.
First Harry, now George. Annie, we're just two old maids now. You speak for yourself, Miss B.
In the back of the cab, the newlyweds kiss ardently.
If either you two see a stranger around here, it's me.
George releases Mary long enough to smile up at Ernie.
Hey, look, there's somebody driving this cab.
Bert, the cop sent this over. He said to float away to Happy Land on the bubbles.
Oh,
champagne
God.
From Bert.
By the way, where are you two going on this here now, honeymoon?
Where are we going? Look at this. There's the kitty, Ernie. Here, come on. Count her, Mary.
Oh, he hands her a sheaf of bills.
Look. You know what we're going to do? We're going to shoot the works. A whole week in New York, a whole week in Bermuda, the highest hotels, the oldest champagne, the richest caviar, the hottest music, and the prettiest wife.
Oh, that does it. Then what?
Then what, honey?
After that, who cares?
Oh, that doesn't. Come here, come here, come here.
They hug joyfully as Ernie suddenly pulls over to the curb.
Don't look now, but there's something funny going on over there at the bank, George. I've never really seen one, but that's got all the earmarks of being a run.
George and Mary peer through the streaming rear window to see throngs of people in raincoats and umbrellas rushing toward the building and loan.
Hey, lady, you got any money in the bank? You better hurry.
George, let's not stop. Let's go.
A minute there.
George gets out of the cab.
Uh-oh.
Please, let's not stop, George.
I'll be back in a minute, Mary.
He runs through the pouring rain as Mary washes him through the rear window, looking worried. As George approaches, the crowd at the door turns to face him silently.
Well, hello, everybody. Miss Thompson, how are you? Harley, what's the matter here? Can't you get in?
George makes his way through the crowd and finds the stairway barred by a gate. He pulls it open and heads upstairs with the crowd following close behind him. George opens the door to find Uncle Billy's pet crow on the counter. And Uncle Billy taking a swig from a pint bottle.
What is this, Uncle Billy? A holiday?
Uncle Billy caps the bottle quickly and motions nervously to George.
Come on in, buddy. That's right. Let's come on in.
George vaults over the counter.
Now, look, why don't you all sit down? Here, there are a lot of seats over there. Make yourself at home.
Nobody moves as George follows Billy into his
George,
office.
Can I see you a minute?
Why did you call?
I just did, but they said you left. This is a pickle, George. This is a pickle.
All right, now what happened? How did it start?
Well, how does a thing like this ever start? All I know is the bank called our loan.
When?
About an hour ago, I handled all our cash.
All of it?
Every cent of it, and still was less than we owed.
Holy mackerel!
And then I got scared, George, and closed the doors. I...
Uncle Billy goes to the phone.
The whole town's gone crazy.
Yeah, hello? George, it's Potter.
Scowling, George takes the phone.
Hello?
George, there is a rumor around town that you've closed your doors. Is that true? Oh, well, I'm very glad to hear that. George, are you all right? Do you need any police?
Police? What for?
Well, mobs get pretty ugly sometimes, you know. George, I am going all out to help in this crisis. I have just guaranteed the bank sufficient funds to meet their needs. They will close up for a week and then reopen.
Just took over the bank.
I may lose a fortune, but I am willing to guarantee your people, too. Just tell them to bring their shares over here, and I will pay 50 cents on the dollar.
Boy, you never miss a trick, do you, Potter? Well, you're going to miss this one.
If you close your doors before 6 p.m., you will never reopen.
George hangs up on Potter. Beside himself, George rakes a hand through his hair. He walks to a picture of his father on the wall and stares at it, then turns to Uncle Billy.
George, was it a nice wedding? Gosh, I wanted to be there.
Yeah.
He smiles at ever-forgetful Uncle Billy.
You can take this one off now.
And tugs at the reminder string on Billy's finger and then walks out to face the waiting crowd.
Now, just remember that this thing isn't as black as it appeared.
Together, the crowd turns toward the window.
I have some news for you, folks. I was just talking to old man Potter, and he's guaranteed cash payments to the bank. The bank's going to reopen next week.
But, George, I got my money here.
Did he guarantee this place?
Well, no, Charlie. I didn't even ask him. We don't need Potter over here.
But I'll take mine now.
No, but you're thinking of this place all wrong, as if I had the money back in a safe. The money's not here. Well, your money's in Joe's house. That's right next to yours. And in the Kennedy house and Mrs. Maitland's house and 100 others. You're lending them the money to build, and then they're going to pay it back to you as best they can. Now, what are you going to do, foreclose on them?
I got $242 in here, and $242 isn't going to break anybody.
Okay, Tom. All right. Here you are. You sign this. You get your money in 60 days.
60 days?
Well, now, that's what you agreed to when you bought your shares.
Tom, did you get your money?
No.
Well, I did. Old man Potter will pay 50 cents on the dollar for every share you got.
50 cents on the dollar?
Yes, cash.
Well, what do you say?
Now, Tom, you have to stick to your original agreement. Now, give us 60 days on this.
Okay,
thing.
Randall.
Are you going to Potter's?
Better to get half than nothing.
The crowd moves toward the door, and George vaults over the counter into their midst.
Now, Randall, wait. Now, wait. Now, listen to me. I beg of you not to do this thing. If Potter gets a hold of this building and loan, there'll never be another decent house built in this town. He's already got charge of the bank. He's got the bus line. He got the department stores, and now he's after us. Why? Well, it's very simple. Because we're cutting in on his business, that's why. And because he wants to keep you living in his slums and paying the kind of rent he decides. Joe, you had one of those Potter houses, didn't you? Well, have you forgotten? Have you forgotten what he charged you for that broken-down shack? Here, Ed, you know, you remember last year when things weren't going so well and you couldn't make your payments? Well, you didn't lose your house, did you? You think Potter would have let you keep it? Can't you understand what's happening here? Don't you see what's happening? Potter isn't selling, Potter's buying. And why? Because we're panicky and he's not, that's why. He's picking up some bargain. Now, we can get through this thing, all right. We've got to stick together, though. We've got to have faith in each other.
But my husband hasn't worked in over a year, and I need money.
How am I going to live until the bank opens?
I got Dr. Bills to pay. I need cash.
I can't keep my kids on faith. I've got to have...
How much do you need?
Mary holds up her honeymoon money.
I got $2,000. Here's $2,000. This will tide us over to the bank reopens. All right, Tom, how much do you need?
$242.
No, Tom, just enough to tide you over until the bank reopens.
I'll take $242.
George counts out the money.
$242. There you are.
That'll close my account.
Your account's still here. That's a loan. Okay. All right, Ed.
Well, I got $300 here, George.
All right, now, Ed, what'll it take until the bank opens? What do you need?
Well, I suppose $20?
$20. Now you're talking. Thanks, Ed. That's fine. All right. Now, Miss Thompson, how much do you want?
But it's your own money,
now,
George.
Don't mind about that. How much do you want now?
I can get along with $20, all right.
$20, fine.
And I'll sign the paper.
You don't have to sign anything. I know. You pay when you can. That's okay. All right, Miss Davis.
That's right. Could I have $17.50?
George grabs her face with both hands and kisses her cheek.
Of course you can have it. You got 50 cents. Seven.
We're going to make it, George.
Six.
They'll never close us up today.
Five.
At close of business, George counts down to 6 o'clock.
Two. One. Bingo! We made it. Close the door. are you? Since we met, look, we're still in business. We've still got $2 left. Well, look, let's have some of that. Let's celebrate. Get some glasses, Telly. Well, a couple of financial wizards.
Those Rockefellers.
Get a tray for these two great big important Samoans here.
We'll save them for seed. Toast.
A toast. A toast to Mama Dollar and to Papa Dollar. And if you want to keep this old building alone in business, you better have a family real quick.
I wish they were rabbits.
I wish they were too.
They tip their glasses, bottoms up.
Okay, let's put them in the safe and see what happens.
Carrying the two $1 bills in a wire basket high above his head, George leads the others in a parade to the vault.
Folks, wedding cigars.
George puts his hands to his head.
Holy mackerel, I'm married. Where's Mary? Mary! Oh, poor Mary. Look, I got a train to get. Oh, the train's gone. Well, I wonder if Ernie's still here with his taxi cab.
George, there's a call for you.
Look, will you get my wife on the phone? She's probably over at her mother's.
Mrs. Bailey is on the phone.
I don't want Mrs. Bailey. I want my wife. Mrs. Bailey. That's my wife. Here, I'll take it in here. Mary, hello. Listen, dear, I'm sorry. Huh? Come home. What home? 320 Sycamore. Well, what? Whose home's that? The Waldorf Hotel, huh?
Hands in his pockets and head bent against the pouring rain, George walks to 320 Sycamore. It's the still vacant and dilapidated old mansion that he and Mary threw rocks at years before. Out back, Bert takes travel posters from the sign man.
How would you like to get a ticket next week? Is there any romance in you?
Sure, I had it, but I got rid of it.
Liver pills. Who wants to see liver pills on your honeymoon? What we want is romantic places, beautiful places, places George wants to go.
Hey, Bert, here he comes.
Come on, we got to get this up. He's coming.
Who?
The groom, idiot. This is their honeymoon. Come on, get that ladder.
What are they, ducks?
Bert rushes to a window of the old house, unrolls a huge poster, and with the help of the sign man, fixes it to the window.
Hurry up. I'm hurrying.
George makes his way up to the overgrown front walk to the door, where a sign reads, Bridal Suite. The makeshift door curtains part, and Ernie pops into view.
Hiya, good evening, sir.
Ernie sweeps open the door and tips his black silk top hat.
Entree.
With grave ceremony, Ernie points the way inside. As George looks up and down in wonder at Ernie's hastily contrived butler's uniform, water pours from the brim of his hat. With a sideways glance, he moves past Ernie into a setting transformed. In the mansion's old living room, a table is before the fire, complete with a checkered tablecloth, china, and candlelight. Mary stands beaming at the head of the table. George lets his eyes wander, taking in every detail, from the broken-down staircase where rain pours in over the banister, to travel posters lining the walls, through a doorway where a bed is made up with fresh linens and a satin dressing gown is laid out, to the bedside where two pairs of slippers, a man's and a woman's, sat side by side. Ernie relieves George of his hat and coat and disappears. George crosses the room to Mary, dodging a leak in the roof as he goes. He tries to muster some words but seems mesmerized by the setting. A huge basket of flowers near a South Seas poster. A bottle of champagne chilling in an ice bucket. A tier of their wedding cake set between the flickering candles and chickens turning slowly on a spit in the fireplace. And the music? Mary's put a spool over the Victrola spindle, placed a cord around the spool, and attached the cord to the rotisserie. As the chickens rotate over the fire, the motion pulls the cord and spins the turntable.
Welcome home, Mr. Bailey.
George is speechless. He tries but can't find the words. Ernie walks up behind him and gives him a friendly shove in the direction of his bride. George moves slowly to where she stands and gropes for words.
Mary, where did you...
But she stills his lips with a fervent kiss. Outside, pals Bert and Ernie serenade in the rain. George and Mary are shadows silhouetted in the window of the old mansion. Mary's eyes shine as they stand locked in a tender embrace.
Remember the night we broke the windows in this old house? This is what I wished for.
He holds her tighter, kissing her face and hair.
You're wonderful.
Both Mary and George seem overcome with emotion in the depth of their love. At the end of their heartfelt serenade, Ernie plants a kiss in the middle of Bert's forehead. Bert responds by pulling Ernie's hat down over his ears.
Get it!
Get
Some years later, George and Mary helped the Martinis move from their Potter-owned rental house.
You hear what he say, Mr. Bailey?
What's that?
I own the house. Me, Giuseppe Martin, I own my own house. No more we live like a pigs in this Potter's field.
One more, that's
it. Marie.
Mary, come on, bring the baby. Come on.
Mrs. Martini says goodbye to her neighbors as Mary and George put the Martini children into their car, six of them, and the family's pet goat. Car's broad front fenders are laden down with boxes and baggage. Followed by the Martinis in a truck piled high with all her possessions, George drives under a makeshift sign reading, "Welcome to Bailey Park." On a neat little street lined with brand new tract homes, the Baileys stand on the steps of a one-story brick house.
Mr. and Mrs. Martini, welcome home.
Good old George, he's always making a speech.
Sam Wainwright stands near his chauffeured car.
Sam Wainwright.
Mary is unimpressed. She offers her gifts.
Bread, that this house may never know hunger. Salt, that life may always have flavor.
And wine, that joy and prosperity may reign forever. Enter the Martini Castle.
Now in Potter's office.
Look, Mr. Potter, it's no skin off my nose. I'm just your little rent collector. But you can't laugh off this Bailey Park anymore. Look at it.
Congressman Blatt is here to see you, sir.
I'll tell the congressman to wait. Go on.
15 years ago, a half a dozen houses stuck here and there. There's the old cemetery, squirrels, buttercups, daisies. I used to hunt rabbits there myself.
He shows Potter plot maps of the area.
Dozens of the prettiest little homes you ever saw. 90% owned by suckers who used to pay rent to you. Your Potter's Field, my dear Mr. Employer, is becoming just that. And are the local yokels making with those David and Goliath wisecracks?
Oh, they are they? Even though they know the Baileys never made a dime out of it.
You know very well why. The Baileys were all chumps. Every one of these homes is worth twice what it cost a building and loan to build. If I were you, Mr. Potter...
You are not me.
As I say, it's no skin off my nose.
The man takes his map and walks to the door.
But one of these days, this bright young man's going to be asking George Bailey for a job.
Potter scowls.
Bailey family's been a boil on my neck long enough. Come in here.
The Baileys talk with
the
Wainwrights.
We're going to take a look at the new factory, and then we're going to drive on down to Florida.
Oh,
why don't you have your friends join us?
Why, sure. Hey, why don't you kids drive down with us, huh?
Oh, I'm afraid I couldn't get away, Sam.
Still got the nose to the old grindstone, eh? Jane, I offered to let George in on the ground floor in plastics, and he turned me down cold.
Oh, now, don't rub it in.
I'm not rubbing it in. Well, I guess we better run along.
Awfully happy to have met you, Mary. Nice
to
meet you.
Bye,
George.
Glad to see you. Come on, George. See you in the
funny paper.
Come on, Mary.
Sam. Have fun.
Thanks for dropping around.
Florida.
Yeehaw.
An arm around each other's waist, George and Mary watch Sam's fancy limo take off down the street. George looks pensive as they walk past the neat little houses of Bailey Park. Reaching his old car, George kicks the door with his foot. Later, Mr. Potter holds a lighter to the end of George's cigar. George puffs away, leaning across Potter's desk.
Thank you, sir. Quite a cigar, Mr. Potter.
You like it? I'll send you a box.
George sits in front of Potter's desk. The seat is so low that George could almost rest his chin on the desktop. He pulls himself up as high as possible and leans his elbow on the desk.
Well, I suppose I'll find out sooner or later, but just what exactly do you want to see me about?
Oh, George, now that's just what I like so much about you. George, I am an old man. Most people hate me, but I don't like them either, so that makes it all even. You know just as well as I do that I run practically everything in this town, but the Bailey Building alone. You know also that for a number of years I've been trying to get control of it. Or kill it, but I haven't been able to do it. You have been stopping me. In fact, you have beaten me, George. And as anyone in this county can tell you, that takes some doing. Now, take during the Depression, for instance. You and I were the only ones that kept our heads. You saved the building and loan. I saved all the rest.
Yes, well, most people say you stole all the rest.
The envious ones say that, George. The suckers. Now, I have stated my side very frankly. Now, let's look at your side. Young man, 27, 28, married, making, say, 40 a week.
45.
45. 45. Out of which, after supporting your mother and paying your bills, you're able to keep, say, 10 if you skimp. A child or two comes along and you won't even be able to save the 10. Now, if this young man at 28 was a common, ordinary yokel, I say he was doing fine. But George Bailey is not a common, ordinary yokel. He is an intelligent, smart, ambitious young man who hates his job, who hates the building and loan almost as much as I do. A young man who's been dying to get out on his own ever since he was born. A young man, the smartest one in the crowd, mind you. A young man who has to sit by and watch his friends go places because he's trapped. Yes, sir, trapped into frittering his life away, playing nursemaid to a lot of garlic eaters. Do I paint a correct picture, or do I exaggerate?
George seems upset that Potter has so deftly hit the mark.
Well, what's your point, Mr. Potter?
My point is I want to hire you.
Hire?
Yeah, I want you to manage my affairs, run my properties. George, I'll start you out at $20,000 a year.
Stunned, George drops the lit cigar. He fumbles for it and stands whisking ashes from his suit.
$20,000 a year?
You wouldn't mind living in the nicest house in town, buying your wife a lot of fine clothes, a couple of business trips to New York a year, maybe once in a while Europe. You wouldn't mind that, would you, George?
Would I?
Half grinning, George looks around the room in disbelief.
You're not talking to somebody else around here, are you? You know, this is me. You remember me? George Bailey.
George Bailey. George Bailey, whose ship has just come in?
Potter winks.
Provided he has enough brains to climb aboard.
In amazement, George sits down in the low chair and puffs his cigar.
Holy mackerel.
Thoughts racing, George nervously smooths his hair and leans forward.
Well, how about the building and loan?
Oh, confounded man, are you afraid of success? I'm offering you a 3 years contract at $20,000 a year starting today. Is it a deal or isn't it?
George stands up slowly.
Well, Mr. Potter, I know I ought to jump at the chance, but I wonder if it'd be possible for you to give me 24 hours to think it over.
Sure. You go on home and talk about it to your wife.
I'd like to do that.
Yeah, then in the meantime, I'll draw up the papers.
All right, sir.
Okay, George.
Smiling tentatively, George offers his hand.
Okay, Mr. Potter.
As he releases Potter's grip, George stares at his own hand, trance-like, then rubs his palm across his jacket as if to wipe off something unpleasant.
All right. Now, wait a minute here. I don't need 24 hours. I don't have to talk to anybody. I know right now, and the answer's no, no. Doggone it. You sit around here and you spin your little webs and you think the whole world revolves around you and your money. Well, it doesn't, Mr. Potter. In the whole vast configuration of things, I'd say you were nothing but a scurvy little spider.
He glares at Potter's bodyguard.
And that goes for you, too.
George sticks the cigar in his mouth and yanks open the door and shouts at the bank employee just outside.
That goes for you, too.
George finds Mary is asleep in their bed. Potter's voice echoes in his ears.
You wouldn't mind living in the nicest house in town, buying your wife a lot of fine clothes, going to New York on a business trip a couple of times a year, maybe Europe once in a while.
Then his own voice from years past.
I know what I'm going to do tomorrow and the next day and next year and the year after that. I'm shaking the dust of this crummy little town off my feet and I'm going to see the world. And then I'm going to build things. I'm going to build airfields. I'm going to build skyscrapers 100 stories high. I'm going to build a bridge a mile long. What is it you want, Mary? What, you want the moon? If you do, just say the word. I'll throw a lasso around it.
George turns toward Mary, who sees him gazing at the sketch. George lassos the moon, now hanging on their bedroom wall.
Buffalo girl, won't you come out tonight?
The sound of her singing, he sits on the bed and bends down to kiss her gently.
Hi.
Why in the world did you ever marry a guy like me?
To keep from being an old maid.
You could have married Sam Wainwright and anybody else in town.
Well, I didn't want to marry anybody else in town. I want my baby to look like you.
You didn't even have a honeymoon. I promised you...
George bolts upright.
You what?
My baby.
Sitting up to face him, she nods.
Mary, you on the nest?
George Bailey Lasso Stork.
Lasso's a stork? What do you mean? What is it, a boy or a girl?
Mm-hmm.
Now you've probably already guessed that George never leaves Bedford Falls.
No.
Mary had her baby, a boy. Then she had another one, a girl. Day after day, she worked away remaking the old Granville house into a home. Night after night, George came back late from the office.
As George heads up the old staircase, the newel post comes off in his hand.
Potter was bearing down hard.
A sign posted in town reads, Checking Station, Recruit Reception Center.
Then came a war. Ma Bailey and Mrs. Hatch joined the Red Cross in Seoul. Mary had two more babies, but still found time to run the USO. Sam Wainwright made a fortune in plastic hoods for planes. Potter became head of the draft board.
1A.
Potter picks recruits.
1A. 1A.
Gower and Uncle Billy sold war bonds. Bert the cop was wounded in North Africa, got the Silver Star. Ernie the taxi driver parachuted into France. Marty helped capture the Remagen Bridge. Harry Bailey topped them all. A Navy flyer, he shot down 15 planes. Two of them as they were about to crash into a transport full of soldiers.
Yes, but George.
George? 4F on account of his ear, George fought the Battle of Bedford Falls.
Hold on now. Don't you know there's a war on?
At the sound of Air Raid Warden Bailey's whistle, a blackout shade is quickly drawn. On lonely sentry duty, George tries chewing tobacco, but spits and misses, spoiling his uniform.
Paper drives, scrap drives, rubber drives. Like everybody else, on VE Day, he wept and prayed. On VJ Day, he wept and prayed again.
Joseph, now show him what happened today.
Yes, sir. This morning, day before Christmas, about 10 a.m. Bedford Falls time.
George shows the newspaper.
Look at that.
The headline reads, President decorates Harry Bailey. Local boy wins Congressional Medal of Honor.
It's going to snow again.
What do you mean it's going to snow? Look at the headline there. President, I know, Harry Bailey.
George, it is marvelous. Commander Harry Bailey.
Mr. Gower, look at this. The second time. Well, look, this is for you. This is for you. Okay. That's for you.
Right.
George hands out newspapers from a large stack under his arm. A crowd near a festooned grandstand waves at Uncle Billy. Above the grandstand, a huge banner reads, Welcome home, Harry Bailey. At Bailey Brothers, an excited office staff waits for George's arrival.
Yeah, read all about it.
George, it's Harry now, a long distance from Washington.
Harry, what do you know about
it? Hey, he reversed the charges. It's okay, isn't it?
Reversed the charges of Washington for a hero? Harry!
You old seven times the son of a gun. Congratulations.
What's he...
Well, how's Mother standing it? Should you... What do you know about... Mother had lunch with her president's wife.
Wait till Martha hears about this.
What they have to eat?
What they have to eat? Harry, you should see what they're cooking up in the town for you. Well, they are. The Navy's going to fly Mother home this afternoon.
In a plane?
What? Uncle Billy. Come in here?
Oh, he stopped at the bank first.
He's not here right now, Harry,
George,
but look, now
George,
tell me about it.
George.
What?
That man is here again.
What man?
Harry,
talk to Houston for a minute, will you? I'll be right back. Well.
Harry.
Oh, good morning, sir.
Carter, bank examiner.
Mr. Carter, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
We're all excited around here. My brother just got the Congressional Medal of Honor. The president just decorated him.
Yeah, well, I guess they do those things. I trust you had a good year.
Good year? Between you and me, Mr. Carter, we're broke.
Yeah, very funny.
Come right in here, Mr. Carter.
Although I shouldn't wonder when you okay reverse charges on personal long-distance calls.
George, shall we hang up?
No, no, he wants to talk to Uncle Billy. You just hold on there.
Now, if you'll cooperate, I'd like to finish with you by tonight. I want to spend Christmas in Elmira with my family.
Oh, don't blame me at all, Mr. Carter. Just step right in here. We'll fix you up.
Uncle Billy at the bank.
24.
He takes a large amount of cash from an envelope, counts it, then puts it back in the envelope.
8,000.
Potter enters with his envelope full of cash. Billy approaches Potter's wheelchair and grabs his newspaper.
Good morning, Mr. Potter. What's the news?
Oh, well, well, well. Harry Bailey wins congressional medal. That couldn't be one of the Bailey boys. You just can't keep those Baileys down. Now, can you, Mr. Potter?
How does Slacker George feel about that?
Very jealous, very jealous. He only lost 3 buttons off his vest. Of course, Slacker George would have gotten 2 of these medals if he had gone.
Bad ear.
Yes. After all, Potter, some people like George had to stay at home. Not every heel was in Germany and Japan.
Potter grabs his newspaper back from Billy, and his bodyguard wheels him away. Pleased with himself, Billy chuckles his way to the teller's window.
Good morning, Mr. Bailey.
Good morning, Horace.
Billy hands Horace his deposit slip.
I guess you forgot something.
Huh?
You forgot something.
What?
Well, aren't you going to make a deposit?
Oh, sure, I am.
Well, then it's usually customary to bring the money with you.
Huh? Oh, shucks.
Confused, Billy searches his coat pockets, then his pants pockets.
How about that finger there?
Horace points to the string on Billy's finger. Back in his office, Potter opens his newspaper. Inside is Uncle Billy's envelope, $8,000 in cash. Potter folds the envelope back up into his newspaper. Potter leans forward in his chair and opens his office door. He peers out into the bank lobby where Billy is frantically searching for his envelope. He goes through a wastebasket, and then, looking frightened and confused, he scurries from the bank. Potter closes his office door and motions for his bodyguard to return him to his desk. Potter strokes his chin, the wheels turning in his mind. Outside on the snowy streets, Uncle Billy runs toward Bailey Brothers.
Just make yourself at home, Mr. Carter. I'll get those books for you. Well, hello, Vi.
George, can I see you for a second?
Well, of course you can. Go on.
He shows Violet into his office.
Uncle Billy, talk to Harry. He's on the telephone.
In a dither, Billy scuffles to the phone.
Oh, Harry, long distance, Harry. Washington.
Oh. Hey, here's Harry on the phone.
You know your nephew, remember? Harry.
Here he is.
Hurry up.
Hello, hello. Oh, yeah, yes, Harry. Yes, everything's fine.
He hangs up on Harry.
Well, my headache's $70,000. It's got to be somewhere.
In his office, George puts something in an envelope for Violet.
Here we are.
Carrington. If I had any character...
Well, it takes a lot of character to leave your hometown and start all over again.
He pulls cash from his pocket.
Now, here, now. You're broke, aren't you?
I know, but...
What do you want to do, hawk your furs, not a hat?
He glances at Violet's feathered hat.
Want to walk to New York? You know, they charge for meals and rent up there, just the same as doing Bedford Falls.
Yeah, sure.
No, no, it's a loan. No, that's my business, building and loan. Besides, you'll get a job. Good luck to you.
I'm glad I know you, George Bailey.
Violet reaches up and kisses him soundly on the cheek.
Say hello to New York for me.
Yeah, sure, I will.
Well, let's hear from him once in a while.
Vi takes a handkerchief from her purse and wipes lipstick off George's cheek.
Merry Christmas, Vi.
Merry Christmas, George.
The bank examiner waits.
Mr. Bailey.
Oh, Mr. Carter, I'm sorry. I was right with you. Uncle Billy.
George opens the door to find Billy under his desk.
What's going on? Oh, by the bank examiner's here.
He's here.
Well, yeah, he wants the accounts payable to... What's the matter with you?
Come here.
Uncle Billy gestures wildly, and George goes in and closes the door, only to burst out seconds later and head for the vault. He searches the vault, then emerges, looking frantic. He hesitates, thinking, then crosses to the counter and searches through a drawer. The bank examiner peers at him suspiciously.
Eustace?
Yeah?
Come here, man. Did you see Uncle Billy with any cash last night?
He had it on his desk counting it before he closed up.
Outside, they retrace Billy's steps.
Did you buy anything?
Nothing, not even a stick of gum.
All right. Now we'll go over every step you took since you left the house, right?
This way.
As they scan the snow-covered sidewalks, Potter surreptitiously peeks through a Venetian blind on his office window, spying on them. At Billy's house, George tries to jog his uncle's poor memory.
Did you put the envelope in your pocket?
Yeah, right. Maybe.
I don't want any maybe. We've got to find that money.
I've no good to you.
Uncle Billy, look, do you realize what's going to happen if we don't find it? Listen to me. Do you have any secret hiding place here in the house? Someplace you'd hide the money?
I've gone over the whole house, even in rooms that have been locked since I lost Laura.
George grabs Billy's lapels.
Thank.
I can't think anymore, George. I can't think anymore. It hurts.
Where's that money, you silly, stupid old fool? Where's that money? You realize what this means? It means bankruptcy and scandal and prison. That's what it means. One of us is going to jail. Well, it's not going to be me.
In uncharacteristic anger, George storms out of Billy's house, kicking aside some boxes as he goes. Uncle Billy collapses onto his desk, sobbing in anguish. At home, Mary and the children decorate the tree and prepare for their Christmas party. George bangs sullenly through the door, brushing snow from his suit jacket.
Hello, darling.
Hello, Daddy.
Hello, Daddy.
How do you like it?
Bless you.
Mary and the boys approach George.
Did you bring the wreath?
Yes, Daddy. Did you bring the Christmas wreath?
What wreath?
Was it the Merry Christmas wreath? Was it for the window?
No, I left it at the office.
Is it snowing?
Yeah, it just started.
Well, where's your coat and hat?
Left them at the office.
What's the matter?
Nothing's the matter. Everything's all right.
Looking stooped and worn, George shuffles to the living room and sits heavily in an armchair. Little Tommy holds a Santa mask to his face and growls at George. George wearily pulls Tommy onto his lap.
Way up at the top. There it is. All right. Fill in that little bare spot. Right.
As Tommy continues his playful growling, George gathers the boy into his arms, sobbing silently.
Thanks, George. Bet I had 50 calls today about the parade, the banquet. Your mother's so excited.
Turning from the Christmas tree, Mary stops in alarm as she sees George's distress. Innocently, Tommy withdraws from his father's grasp and begins to drape tinsel over George's head. Hiding his face behind Tommy's shoulder, George quickly brushes aside his tears, fighting to regain his composure.
Must she keep playing that?
I have to practice it for the party tonight, Daddy.
Mom said we could stay up till midnight and sing Christmas carols.
Can you sing, Daddy?
Better hurry and shave. The families will be here soon.
Families? I don't want the families over here.
Rising, George brushes the tinsel from his hair.
Come on out in the kitchen with me while I finish dinner.
She takes his arm and walks to the kitchen.
Excuse me!
Tommy tugs on George's coat.
Oh, yeah, another big red letter day for the Baileys.
Daddy, the Browns next door have a new car. You should see it.
Well, what's the matter with our car? Isn't it good enough for you?
Yes, Daddy.
Rebuffed, Pete backs away.
Excuse me.
Excuse you for what?
I burped.
All right, Tommy, you're excused. Now go on upstairs and see if little Zuzu wants any.
Mary continues into the kitchen.
Zuzu, well, what's the matter with Zuzu?
Oh, she's got a cold. She's in bed. Caught it coming home from school. They gave her a flower for a prize, and she didn't want to crush it, so she didn't button up her coat.
What is it, sore throat or what?
Just a cold. The doctor says it's not
the doctor?
Serious.
Was the doctor here?
Yes, I called him right away. He says it's nothing to worry
about. Is she running at temperature? What is this?
Just a teensy one. 99.6. She'll be all right.
Of course, it's this old house. I don't know why we don't all have pneumonia. The drafty old barn up the place. Might as well be living in a refrigerator. Why do we have to live here in the first place and stay around this measly, crummy old town?
George, what's wrong?
Wrong everything, George. You call this a happy family. Why do we have to have all these kids?
Dad, how do you spell frankincense?
I don't know. I asked your mother.
Where are you going?
Going up to see Zuzu.
Told me to write a play for tomorrow.
As George heads down the stairs, the newel post on the stair rail comes off in his hand again. He rears back as if he wants to hurl it, and then slams it back into place and runs up the stairs, taking them two at a time.
F-R-A-N-K-I-N.
Hi, Daddy.
Little Zuzu sits in bed holding a rose.
What happened to you?
I want a flower.
Wait a minute. Where do you think you're going?
Want to give my flower a drink.
All right. I'll give Daddy the flower. I'll give it a drink.
No. As he takes it, some petals fall off onto the bed.
Look, Daddy. Paste it.
He picks up the fallen petals and pretends to fit them back into the rose.
I'm going to paste this together.
Then, turning aside, he slips the petals into his change pocket.
Good as new. Now, give the flower a drink.
He puts the rose in water.
Do something for me?
What?
Will you try and get some sleep?
I'm not sleepy. I want to look at my flower.
I know, but you just go to sleep. And then you can dream about it. And it'll be a whole garden.
Zuzu turns on her pillow to gaze at her rose. George puts a hand to her forehead, his face full of concern. Downstairs, Janie practices as the others continue party preparations. Mary hurries to the phone.
Hello? Yes, this is Mrs. Bailey. Oh, thank you, Mrs. Welch. I'm sure she'll be all right. The doctor said that she ought to be out of bed in time to have her Christmas dinner.
Is that Zuzu's teacher?
Yes.
George grabs the phone.
Hello. Hello, Mrs. Welch. Well, it's George Bailey. I'm Zuzu's father. Say, what kind of a teacher are you anyway? What do you mean sending her home like that, half naked? You realize she'll probably end up with pneumonia on account of you?
George.
Is this the sort of thing we pay taxes for, to have teachers like you, stupid, silly, careless people, that send our kids home without any clothes on? You know, maybe my kids aren't the best-dressed kids, and maybe they don't have any decent clothes. Oh, that's stupid.
George relinquishes the phone to Mary.
I want to apologize. Hello?
Mrs. Hello? Wells isn't there.
She's hung up.
I'll hang her up.
Hey, you, I'm not your father.
What is that?
But an angry Mr. Wells is there.
Oh, Mr. Wells. Okay, that's fine, Mr. Wells. Give me a chance to tell you what I really think of your wife.
George.
Will you
George.
Get out and let me handle this?
George wrestles the phone from Mary's grasp.
Hello, what? Oh, you will, huh? Okay, Mr. Wells, anytime you think you're man enough, you... Hello? Any...
George hangs up and paces into the living room.
Dad, how do you spell hallelujah?
How should I know? What do you think I am, a dictionary? Tommy, stop that, stop it. Janie, haven't you learned that silly tune yet? You play it over and over again. Now stop it, stop it.
The whole family freezes in shocked silence. George turns away from them, raking his hands through his hair. In front of him is the model bridge he designed and built. He raises his legs and kicks it savagely, sending it crashing to the floor, then goes to his drafting table and sweeps his blueprints and drawings onto the floor. Mary and the children watch him silently, afraid to move. His anger finally spent, George turns to his family.
Sorry, Mary. Janie, I'm sorry. I didn't mean that. You go on and practice.
Janie's chin quivers and tears brim in her eyes.
Pete, I owe you an apology, too. I'm sorry. What do you want to know?
Nothing, Daddy.
Pete bites his lip, trying to look brave.
What's the matter with everybody? Janie, go on. I told you to practice. Now go on, play.
Oh, Daddy.
Mary grabs Tommy and moves to Janie's side.
George, why must you torture the children? Why don't you...
She fights back tears.
Mary.
In desperation, George looks at Mary and then at each of the children. And then, moving like someone in a trance, he leaves the house. Mary moves quickly to the phone.
Bed for 247, please.
Is Daddy in trouble?
Yes, Pete.
Shall I pray for him?
Yes, Janie, pray very hard.
Me too?
You too, Tommy. Hello?
George
Uncle
sits
Billy?
In Potter's office.
I'm in trouble, Mr. Potter. I need help. Through some sort of an accident, my company shortened their accounts. The bank examiner got there today. I've got to raise $8,000 immediately.
Oh, that's what the reporters wanted to talk to you about.
The reporters?
Yes, they called me up from your building and loan. Oh, there's a man over there from the DA's office, too, who's looking for you.
Please help me, Mr. Potter. Help me, won't you, please? Can't you see what it means to my family? I'll pay any sort of a bonus on the loan, any interest. If you still want the building and loan, I'm...
George, could it possibly be there's a slight discrepancy in the books?
No, sir, there's nothing wrong with the books. I've just misplaced $8,000. I can't find it anywhere.
You misplaced $8,000?
Yes, sir.
Have you notified the police?
No, sir, I didn't want the publicity. Harry's homecoming tomorrow.
You're going to believe that one. What have you been doing, George? Playing the market with the company's money?
No, sir. No, sir, I haven't.
What is it, a woman, then? You know, it's all over town that you've been giving money to Violet Bick.
What?
Not that it makes any difference to me, but why do you come to me? Why don't you go to Sam Wainwright and ask him for the money?
I can't get a hold of him. He's in Europe.
Well, what about all your other friends?
Well, they don't have that kind of money, Mr. Potter. You know that. You're the only one in town that can help me.
I've suddenly become quite important. Well, what kind of security would I have, George? You got any stocks?
No, sir.
Bonds? Real estate? Collateral of any kind?
Well, I have some life insurance. $15,000 policy.
Yes, how much is your equity in it?
$500.
$500? And you asked me to lend you $8,000. Look at you. You used to be so cocky. You were going to go out and conquer the world. You once called me a warped, frustrated old man. What are you but a warped, frustrated young man? Miserable little clerk crawling in here on your hands and knees and begging for help. No securities, no stocks, no bonds, nothing but a miserable little $500 equity in a life insurance policy. You're worth more dead than alive. Why don't you go to the riffraff you love so much and ask them to let you have 8,000? You know why? Because they run you out of town on a rail. But I tell you what I'm going to do for you, George. Since the state examiner is still here, as a stockholder of the building and loan, I'm going to swear out a warrant for your arrest. Misappropriation of funds, manipulation, malfeasance.
As Potter rants, George heads for the door.
Go ahead, go ahead. You can't hide in a little town like this. Bill, this is Potter.
George stumbles out into the snowy night and crosses the street to his car. Unable to wrench open the frozen door, he climbs in through the window. At Martini's bar, George drinks straight whiskey.
Glad you come.
How about some of that good spaghetti?
We got everything.
As he drinks, George fingers the insurance policy in his breast pocket. Unshaven and disheveled, George is the very picture of a desperate man. Bringing his locked hands to his lips, he fights back tears.
God. Oh, God. Dear Father in Heaven, I'm not a praying man, but if you're up there and you can hear me, show me the way out at the end of my rope.
Bartender Nick leans over the bar in concern.
Are you all right, George? Want somebody to take you home, huh?
Mr. Martini approaches George from behind.
Why you drink so much, my friend? Please go home, Mr. Bailey. This is Christmas Eve.
Bailey? Which Bailey?
This Mr. George Bailey.
The man gets up, grabs George off the bar stool, and punches him in the mouth. George sprawls on the floor.
If you talk to my wife like that, you'll get worse. She cried for an hour. It isn't enough she's slave teaching you stupid kids how to read and write, and you have to ball her out, eh?
Get out of here, Mr. Welsh!
Now, wait a minute. I want to pay for my drink.
Never mind the money. You get out of here, quick!
Oh, you hit my best friend.
Get out!
Nick and Martini push Mr. Wells out the door and rush to George, lifting him to his feet.
You all right, George?
Who's that?
He gone. No worry. His name is Welsh. He no come into my place no more.
Oh, well, that's what I get for praying.
Last time he come in here. You hear that, Nick?
Where's my insurance policy?
He reaches into his pocket.
Here. No, please, no go this way, Mr. Bailey. No, feels good. Sit down and rest. Please, no, go away, please.
In his car, George drives recklessly over the icy streets. Rounding a corner, he skids and slams into a tree. George stumbles from the car and tries to kick the door shut with his foot, but the latch is sprung. From a nearby house, a man with an umbrella approaches as George continues kicking the car door.
What do you think you're doing? Now look what you did.
There's a gash in the tree trunk.
My grandfather planted this tree. Hey, you! Hey, you! Come back here, drunken fool! Get this car out of here!
Unheeding, George staggers off into the driving snow. Approaching the bridge, a truck squeals to a stop, narrowly missing George.
Hey, what's the matter with you? Look where you're going.
George moves back, letting the truck pass, then crosses to the far side of the bridge. Slipping on the icy surface, he moves beyond the trestles onto the narrow catwalk and stumbles along with his hand brushing the snow on the railing. He stops midway and peers down into the choppy, frigid water, willing himself to jump. Unseen by George, a plump, white-haired little man with a pleasant, almost cherubic face stands nearby watching George with a smile on his face. As George is about to leap, a figure plunges into the water from out of nowhere.
Help!
Looking down, he sees a man flailing about in the water. Without hesitation, George peels off his jacket, climbs onto the railing, and dives into the freezing river. A watchman in the bridge house hears the call for help and runs out carrying a large spotlight. He scurries to the bridge as George swims toward the drowning man. The watchman runs onto the catwalk and shines his spotlight down onto the water, searching for the source of the commotion. Spotting the two men in the water, he lights the way as George hauls the hysterical victim to safety. In the bridge house, George sits by the stove, stripped to his long johns, sipping hot coffee from a tin mug. The watchman's eyes open wide as the drowning victim changes into a garment that looks like a knee-length nightgown.
I didn't have time to get some stylish underwear. Wife gave me this on my last birthday. I passed away in it.
Leaning toward a spittoon, the watchman stops short as the man's comment sinks in.
Oh, Tom Sawyer's drying out, too.
The little man ruffles the pages of a worn copy of Tom Sawyer.
You should read the new book Mark Twain's writing now.
The watchman eyes him curiously.
How did you happen to fall in?
I didn't fall in. I jumped in to save George.
You what? To save me?
Well, I did, didn't I? You didn't go through with it, did you?
Go through with what?
Suicide.
Oh, it's against the law to commit suicide around here.
Yeah, it's against the law where I come from, too. Well,
where do you come from?
Heaven?
Again, the watchman draws back from the spittoon. He and George exchange dubious glances.
I had to act quickly. That's why I jumped in. I knew if I were drowning, you'd try to save me. You see, you did. And that's how I saved you.
Very funny.
Your lip's bleeding, George.
Yeah. I got a bust in the jaw in answer to a prayer a little bit ago.
Oh, no, 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 George. I'm the answer to your prayer. That's why I was sent down here.
How'd you know my name?
Oh, I know all about you. I've watched you grow up from a little boy.
What are you, a mind reader or something?
No.
Well, who are you then?
Clarence Oddbody, AS2.
Oddbody? AS2, what's that AS2?
Angel, second class.
Leaning back in his chair, the watchman crashes to the floor in shock. Eyes wide, he scrambles to his feet and backs out the door. Clarence smiles and waves him a small salute.
Cheerio, my good man.
Still smiling, Clarence approaches George and stands over him with a fatherly expression.
Oh, brother.
George hangs his head and rubs his forehead.
Where's that? I wonder what Martini put in those drinks.
He squints up at Clarence.
Hey, what's with you? What'd you say just a minute ago? Why'd you want to save me?
That's what I was sent down for. I'm your guardian angel.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
Ridiculous of you to think of killing yourself for money. $8,000.
Yeah, just things like that. Now, how do you know that?
I told you I'm your guardian angel. I know everything about you.
Well, you look about like the kind of an angel I'd get. Sort of a fallen angel, aren't you? What happened to your wings?
I haven't worn my wings yet. That's why I'm an angel second class.
George regards Clarence with a wry chuckle.
I don't know whether I like it very much, being seen around with an angel without any wings.
Oh, I've got to earn them. And you'll help me, won't you?
Sure, sure. How?
By letting me help you.
Clarence puts his hand on George's shoulder.
Well, you can help me. You don't happen to have 8,000 bucks on you, do
you? Oh, no, we don't use money in heaven.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I keep forgetting it. Comes in pretty handy down here, bub.
Oh, tut, tut, tut.
I found it out a little late. I'm worth more dead than alive.
Now, look, you mustn't talk like that. I won't get my wings with that attitude. You just don't know all that you've done. If it hadn't been for you...
Yeah, if it hadn't been for me, everybody would be a lot better off. My wife and my kids and my friends. Look, little fella, why you go off and haunt somebody else?
No, now you don't understand. I've got my job.
Oh, shut up, will you?
With a pained expression, Clarence lifts his eyes skyward.
Oh, this isn't going to be so easy.
He paces, thinking hard.
Yeah, so you still think killing yourself would make everyone feel happier, eh?
Oh, I don't know. I guess you're right. I suppose it'd been better if I'd never been born at all.
What'd you say?
I said I wish I'd never been born.
Ooh, you mustn't say things like that.
He stopped short.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. That's an idea.
And looked skyward again.
What do you think? Yeah, that'll do it. All right.
Satisfied, Clarence moves toward George and holds out his hands.
You've got your wish. You've never been born.
A huge gust of wind blows the door open. Clarence runs to the door and pokes his head out.
You don't have to make all that fuss about it.
He closes the door and returns to George.
You've never been born. You don't exist. You haven't a care in the world. No worries, no obligations, no $8,000 to get, no potter looking for you with a sheriff.
Say something else in that ear.
Sure, you can hear out of it.
George taps his bad ear.
That's a doggone thing. I haven't heard anything out of that ear since I was a kid. Must be that jump in that cold water.
Your lips stop bleeding too, George.
George licks his cut lip, then draws his hand over the side of his mouth and looks at his hand. There's no blood.
What do you know about that? What's happening? Stopped snowing out here, didn't it? What's happened here? What I need's a couple of good stiff drinks. How about you, Angel? You want a drink? Come on, as soon as these clothes of ours are dry.
Our clothes are dry.
I wouldn't know about that. Stove's hotter than I thought. Come on, get your clothes on. We'll stroll up to my car and get... I'm sorry. I'll stroll. You fly.
I can't fly. I haven't got my wings.
You haven't got your wings, that's right.
George and Clarence trudge through the dark, back to the tree George ran his car into.
What's the matter?
Well, this is where I left my car, and it isn't here.
You have no car.
Well, I had a car, and it was right here. I guess somebody moved.
Evening.
Oh, say, hey, where's my car?
I beg your pardon?
My car. I'm the fellow that owns the car that ran into your tree.
What tree?
What do you mean, what tree? This tree. Here, I ran into it. Cut a big gash in the side of it.
Man examines the tree. Seeing no damage, he leans close to George and sniffs for alcohol.
You must mean two other trees. You had me worried. One of the oldest trees in Pottersville.
Pottersville? Well, you mean Bedford Falls.
I mean Pottersville. Don't you think I know where I live? What's the matter with you?
The man stops up his front walk. George looks around in confusion.
I don't know. Either I'm off my nut or he is. Or you are.
It isn't me.
Maybe I left the car up at Martini's. Well, come on.
George leads Clarence to Martini's Tavern.
Martini's a friend of mine.
The place is packed with a fast-looking crowd. They find two empty seats at the bar, and George looks around briefly and then turns to Nick, the bartender.
Hello, Nick. Hey, where's the martini?
Want a martini?
No, martini, your boss. Where is he?
Hey, look, I'm the boss. You want a drink or don't you?
Okay, all right. Double bourbon, will you, quick, huh?
Okay.
Nick moves away, then turns back to Clarence.
What's yours?
I was just thinking. It's been so long since I...
Look, mister, I'm standing here waiting for you to make up your mind.
That's a good man. I was just thinking of a flaming rum punch. No, it's not cold enough for that. Not nearly cold enough. Wait a minute.
I got it.
Mulled wine, heavy on the cinnamon and light on the cloves. Oh, with you, me lad, and be lively.
Hey, look, mister. We save hard drinks in here for men who want to get drunk fast, and we don't need any characters around to give the joint atmosphere. Is that clear? But I'll have to slip you my lip for a convincer.
What's he talking about?
Nick. Just give him the same as mine. He's okay.
Okay.
What's the matter with him? Never saw Nick act like that before.
You see a lot of strange things from now on.
Oh, yeah. Hey, little fella, you worry me, you know. You got some place to sleep?
No.
You don't? Well, you got any money?
No.
No wonder you jumped in the river.
I jumped in the river to save you so I could get my wings. Uh-oh. Somebody's just made it.
Made what?
Every time you hear a bell ring, it means that some angel's just got his wings.
George looks uncomfortable as Nick glowers at them from behind the bar.
Look,
he leans close to Clarence.
I
think maybe you better not mention getting your wings around here. But
why, don't they believe in angels?
Yeah, I believe.
Oh, why should they be surprised when they see one?
Clarence looks from George to Nick innocently.
He never grew up. How old are you anyway, Clarence?
293. Next May.
Nick slams a bottle down. Is it?
Out you two pixies go, through the door or out the window.
Look, Nick, what's wrong?
Now, that's another thing. Where do you come off calling me Nick?
Well, Nick, that's your name.
What's that got to do with it? I don't know you from Adam's off ox.
Mr. Gower enters.
Hey, you roomie there. Come in.
He looks like a derelict.
Didn't I tell you never to come panhandling around here, huh?
Nick squirts seltzer water in his face. Horrified, George runs to him.
Mr. Gower.
George grabs Gower's lapels, looking him up and down in disbelief.
Mr. Gower, look, this is George Bailey. Don't you know me?
Oh.
There's no recognition in Mr. Gower's eyes.
No.
Trauma.
Mr. Gower! Hey, what is it? Hey, Nick, isn't that Mr. Gower the druggist?
You know, that's another reason for me not to like you. That rumhead spent 20 years in jail for poisoning a kid. If you know him, you must be a jailbird yourself. Would you show these gentlemen to the door?
Sure.
This way, gentlemen.
A heavyset bouncer grabs George and Clarence by their collars and shoves them out the door. They both fall face first into the snow.
Get me! I'm giving out wings.
Inside, Nick opens and closes the cash register.
You see, George, you were not there to stop Gower from putting that poison into the capsule.
What do you mean I wasn't there? Remember the stick?
George gets to his feet, noting the sign on the tavern.
Hey, what's going on around here?
The neon sign says Nick's.
Well, this ought to be Martini's place.
Sitting on a rock, Clarence looks at George sadly as George scowls down at him.
Look, who are you?
I told you, George, I'm your guardian angel.
Yeah, I know. You told me that.
George leans forward and pokes Clarence with his finger as if to see if he's real.
What else are you? You a hypnotist?
No, of course not.
Well, then why am I seeing all these strange things here?
Don't you understand, George? It's because you were not born.
Well, if I wasn't born, who am I?
You're nobody. You have no identity.
Oh, what do you mean, no identity? My name's George Bailey.
There is no George Bailey.
George searches his pockets.
You have no papers, no cards, no driver's license, no 4F card, no insurance policy. They're not there either.
George reaches into his change pocket.
What?
Zuzu's petals.
Frantic, George turns the pocket inside out. It's empty.
You've been given a great gift, George. A chance to see what the world would be like without you.
Grimacing, George shakes his head.
Wait a minute here. Oh, this is some sort of a funny dream I'm having. So long, mister. I'm going home.
Home? What home?
Now, shut up. Cut it out. You're crazy. That's what I think. You're screwy. You're driving me crazy, too. I'm seeing things here. I'm going home and see my wife and family. You understand that? And I'm going home alone.
George flees from Clarence as the angel looks skyward.
How am I doing, Joseph? No, I didn't have a drink.
Hurrying through the streets, George passes a large lighted sign reading Pottersville, where the Bedford Falls sign used to be. As he walks along once quiet Main Street, music blares from bars and nightclubs. Where peaceful shops and businesses once existed, gaudy neon signs flash, nightclub, pool, fights every Wednesday night, motel, pawnbroker, no trespassing, keep off the grass, on a theater marquee, girls, girls, girls. George runs faster, stopping in front of his building, Bailey Brothers Building and Loan, but now the huge neon sign on the building reads, Dime a Dance, Jitterbuggers Welcome.
Hey, where'd the building and loan move to?
Building and what?
The Bailey building and loan was up there.
They went out of business years ago.
A cop struggles to subdue a screaming woman. It's Violet.
I know Violet and I have to check out the
Hey, Violet! Hey, listen, it's Violet.
I know, get in.
Hey,
George sees Ernie's cab pulling away from the curb.
Hey, Ernie! Ernie!
The taxi stops as George runs up.
Ernie, take me home. I'm going off my nut.
Where do you live?
On a doggone it, Ernie. Don't you start pulling that stuff. You know where I live. 320 Sycamore. Now, hurry up.
All right, 320
Sycamore. Yeah, yeah, hurry up. Doo-doo. Come on.
George looks haggard as he talks to Ernie.
Straighten me out here. Look, I got some bad liquor or something. Listen to me. Now, you're Ernie Bishop, and you live in Bailey Park with your wife and kid. That's right, isn't it?
You seen my wife?
Seen your wife? I've been to your house 100 times.
Look, bud, what's the idea? I live in a shack in Potter's Field. My wife ran away 3 years ago and took the kid, and I ain't never seen you before in my life, see?
Okay, well, just step on it. Just get me home.
Ernie glances back at George, sure he's picked up a madman. As he drives slowly past Bert, the policeman, he reaches his arm out of the window and thumps the side of his taxi. Bert looks up and Ernie points to the back seat, then makes a circling motion to the side of his head with his finger. Bert understands and gets into his squad car.
Is this the place?
Of course it's the place.
Well, this house ain't been lived in for 20 years.
George approaches the vacant, dilapidated old mansion that only hours ago was warm and alive, filled with the voices of his loving family.
What's up, Ernie? I don't know, but we better keep our eye on this guy. He's bets.
Ernie and Bert stand near Ernie's cab and watch George run to the house. Ernie turns on the cab spotlight and trains it on George as he stumbles into the abandoned structure. Entering what was the front door, George bats away cobwebs and dodges debris as he makes his way through the silent rooms.
Mary! Mary!
His eyes filled with dread, George runs through the house, calling his family. Clarence appears.
They're not here, George. You have no children.
Where are they? What have you done?
All right, put up your hands. No fast moves. Come on out here, both of you.
Bert! Thank heaven you're here.
Back there.
Bert, what's happened to this house? Wait, where's Mary? Where's my kids?
Watch them, Bert.
Now, Bert, come on, Ernie, come on. What's the matter with you two guys? You were here on my wedding night. You both of you stood out there on the porch and sung to us. Don't you remember?
I think I better be going.
Look, now, why don't you be a good kid and we'll take you into a doctor. Everything's going to be all right. Now,
Bert, now listen to it. Ernie, will you take me over to my mother's house?
Sure, he'll...
Bert, listen, it's that fellow there. He says he's an angel. Yeah. He's trying to hypnotize
me. I hate to do this, Bert, to you, bud, but...
As Bert goes to strike George with the butt of his gun, Clarence grabs Bert's arm and bites it. Bert wrestles Clarence to the ground, trying to cuff him.
Joseph!
Suddenly, Clarence disappears, and Bert is scuffling with thin air. He gropes at the void as Ernie looks on, dumbfounded.
Where'd he go? Where'd he go? I had him right here.
Tongue-tied, Ernie motions numbly to Bert and points toward his cab.
I need a drink.
Well, which way to go? Help me find him.
Arriving at the Bailey residence of his childhood, George runs to the porch and rings the doorbell, then knocks on the front door glass. Stepping back, he sees a sign reading, Ma Bailey's Boarding House. Mrs. Bailey opens the door and stares at George coldly. She looks stern and careworn.
Mother.
Not like the sweet, gentle mother he knows.
Mother? What do you want?
Mother, this is George. I thought sure you'd remember me.
George who? If you're looking for a room, there's no vacancy.
Mother, listen, please help me. Something terrible's happened to me. I don't know what it is. Something's happened to everybody. Please let me come in and keep me here until I get over it.
Get over what? I don't take in strangers unless they're sent here by somebody I know.
Well, I know everybody you know. What, your brother-in-law, Uncle Billy.
You know him?
Well, sure I do.
When'd you see him last?
Today, over at his house.
It's a lie. He's been in the insane asylum ever since he lost his business. And if you ask me, that's where you belong.
She slams the door in his face, and in horror, he bolts from the porch. Leaning on the mailbox, Clarence waits patiently as George stares into the night, bewilderment and panic in his eyes.
Strange, isn't it? Each man's life touches so many other lives. And when he isn't around, he leaves an awful hole, doesn't he?
I've heard of things like this. You got me in some kind of a spell or something. Well, I'm going to get out of it. I'll get out of it. And I know how, too. The last man I talked to before all this stuff started happening to me was Martini.
You know where he lives?
Well, sure I know where he lives. He lives in Bailey Park.
George and Clarence walk through the snow to the site of Bailey Park, but an old cemetery looms before them.
Sure this is Bailey Park?
No, I'm not sure of anything anymore. All I know is this should be Bailey Park. But where are the houses?
We went here to build them.
George brushes the snow from a headstone reading, In memory of our beloved son, Harry Bailey.
Your brother, Harry Bailey, broke through the ice and was drowned at the age of 9.
That's a lie. Harry Bailey went to war. He got the Congressional Medal of Honor. He saved the lives of every man on that transport.
Every man on that transport died. Harry wasn't there to save them because you weren't there to save Harry.
His face full of anguish, George falls to his knees. With bare hands, he digs snow away from the headstone to reveal the dates, 1911 to 1919.
You see, George, you really had a wonderful life. Don't you see what a mistake it would be to throw it away?
Clarence.
Yes, George?
Where's Mary?
He grabs Clarence's lapels.
I can't.
I don't know how you know these things, but tell me, where is she? If you know where she is, tell me where my wife is.
I'm not supposed to tell.
Please, Clarence, tell me where she is.
You're not going to like it, George.
Where is she?
She's an old maid. She never married.
Where's Mary? Where is she?
She's just about to close up the library.
Clarence falls to the ground as George releases him roughly and dashes away.
Oh, there must be some easier way for me to get my wings.
A woman exits the Pottersville Public Library. It's Mary. She looks pale and pinched with her hair drawn back in a severe bun. She wears rimless spectacles and a dowdy-looking suit and mannish hat.
Mary.
Startled, Mary stops, eyeing this strained man anxiously, then turns and scurries away.
Mary!
George pursues her, and she starts to run.
Mary!
Overtaking Mary, he grabs her.
Mary! Mary, it's George! Don't you know me? What's happened to us?
I don't know. You let me go!
Mary, please. Oh, don't do this to me. Please, Mary. Help me. Where's our kids? I need you, Mary.
Struggling fiercely, she breaks free of his grasp and runs into a crowded bar. George pursues her, pushing through the crowd. A group of men stop him.
Charlie! That's my wife!
Mary faints.
There you go.
Somebody call the police.
I'm going to hit him on the head with a bottle.
You need a straitjacket.
Sobbing, George breaks free. He fights his way through the crowd as a squad car arrives and Bert strides up quickly. George punches Bert in the face and takes off, running. Pedestrians scurry and duck for safety as Bert fires into the air, running for his squad car. He pursues with sirens wailing as George disappears into the night. George runs wildly to the bridge and out onto the catwalk, stopping where he first saw Clarence plunge into the water.
Clarence! Clarence! Help me, Clarence! Get me back! Get me back! I don't care what happens to me! Get me back to my wife and kids! Help me, Clarence, please! Please! I want to live again! I want to live again! I want to live again! Please, God!
As George pleads with God, sobbing into his hands, the snow begins to fall. Bert's squad car drives onto the bridge and stops.
Hey, George!
Bert gets out and approaches the catwalk.
George! You all right? Hey, what's the matter?
Now get out of here, Bert, or I'll hit you again. Get out of here.
What the Sam Hill you yelling for, George?
You...
George. Bert, do you know me?
Know you? You kidding? I've been looking all over town trying to find you. I saw your car piled into that tree down there, and I thought maybe you... Hey, your mouth's bleeding. Are you sure you're all right?
George sticks out his tongue and licks the corner of his mouth, then touches his fingers to the cut.
My mouth's bleeding, Bert! My mouth's bleeding! Zuzu's petals! Zuzu! There they are! Bert! What do you know about that? Merry Christmas!
Leaping with joy, George hugs Bert.
Merry.
Then takes off running. Merry. He passes his car struck by the tree. And reaching Main Street, stops in front of the sign reading, "You are now in Bedford Falls."
Hello, Bedford Falls!
He raises his arm in joyous greeting and runs gleefully down Main Street.
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas, George!
Merry Christmas, movie house! Merry Christmas, Emporium! Merry Christmas, you wonderful old Billy and Lone!
Delirious at the sight of all this familiar, he runs to the bank and peers through Potter's office window.
Hey! Merry Christmas, Mr. Potter!
Happy New Year to you! In jail! Go on home, they're waiting for you.
At home, the bank examiner and reporters wait.
Mary!
George bursts jubilantly through the door.
Mary! Well, hello, Mr. Bank Examiner!
power.
Mr. Bailey, there's a deficit.
I know, $8,000.
George, I've got a little paper.
I'll get it to warrant for my arrest. Isn't it wonderful? I'm going to jail. Merry Christmas. Reporters, where's Mary? Mary, oh, look at this wonderful old drafty house. Mary!
He runs from room to room.
Mary! Have you seen my wife?
Mary!
Mary! Mary! Mary! Daddy! Daddy!
Kids!
He runs to the stairs. And kisses the newel post as it comes off in his hand.
Kids! Janie! Janie! Tommy!
He gathers the three to him and covers her face with kisses.
Oh, I could eat you up. Where's your mother?
We're looking for you.
With Uncle Billy.
Daddy!
Zuzu! Zuzu, my little ginger snap. How do you feel?
Fine. Not a smidge of temperature.
Not a smidge of hallelujah.
Hello.
Mary runs in.
George. George, darling. Where are you? George.
Let me touch. Are you real?
As he tries to speak, he smothers her with kisses.
George.
You have no idea what's happened to me.
You have no idea what happened. Well, come on, George. Come on downstairs. Quick, they're on their way.
All right.
Come on.
She pulls him down the stairs as Zuzu clings to his back and Tommy rides under his arm.
Now you stand right over here by the tree. Right there, and don't move. Don't move.
She sweeps wrapping paper and ribbon from a table onto the floor.
George, it's a miracle. It's a miracle.
She kisses him and runs to the open door.
Come in, Uncle Billy. Everybody in here.
Uncle Billy hurries in, carrying a huge wicker basket, and dumps its contents on the table. It's money.
Isn't it wonderful? Yes. So many friends. Mary did it, George. Mary did it. She told some people you were in trouble with it. They scattered all over town collecting money. Didn't ask any questions.
People rush in, opening their wallets.
Another run on the bank. Here, George. Merry Christmas.
One after another, they place handfuls of money on the table. Holding Zuzu in his arms, George looks on in wonder, smile spreading. George's mother hugs Uncle Billy as Mr. Martini comes in carrying a bowl filled with bills.
Mr. Martini!
Hey, Mr. Martini! Step right up here!
I'm faster than Jukebox, too!
George is overwhelmed as Martini dumps his money onto the table. He's followed by Mr. Gower, George's old boss. He empties a jar full of bills onto the table. George laughs with delight, catching Mary's eye. And now Violet steps up, returning the money George gave her.
I'm not going to go, George. I changed my mind.
She's followed by Annie, the Bailey's old housekeeper. Mary laughs with gratitude as Annie speaks and others step forward. It's the high school principal next.
George, I got the faculty all left out of it. Here's some beautiful.
He hands Zuzu a gold pocket watch on a chain.
Well, in my head, if it wasn't for you, George.
Another contributor. Then Ernie calls for quiet.
Quiet. Now get this. It's from London.
Oh.
Mr. Gower cabled you need cash. Stop. My office instructed to advance you up to $25,000. Stop.
Oh.
Hee-haw and Merry Christmas, Sam Wainwright.
Overcome with emotion, George's eyes search the room for Mary. He meets her joyful gaze and then lowers his head onto Zuzu's chest. George's mother wipes away happy tears as Mary calls out from the staircase. Janie finally gets the chance to play her well-rehearsed piece and everyone joins in, singing the familiar carol. The voices rise together. Even Mr. Carter, the bank examiner, is inspired to part, if a bit reluctantly, with a bit of cash. Others step forward, and Tom tears up George's IOU. Eustace sits happily with his adding machine, totaling up the offerings. The crowd parts, and George's brother Harry walks in, dressed in his naval uniform. He's followed by Bert.
The fool flew all the way up here in a blizzard.
Harry, how about your banquet in New York?
Oh, I left right in the middle of it as soon as I got Mary's telegram. Good idea, Ernie. A toast. To my big brother, George, the richest man in town.
Suddenly, George sees a book lying on top of the pile of money. He picks up the old, worn copy of Tom Sawyer and, opening it, reads an inscription on the flyleaf. Dear George, remember no man is a failure who has friends. Thanks for the wings. Love, Clarence.
What's that?
That's a Christmas present from a very dear friend of mine.
A bell on the Christmas tree rings.
That's right.
Holding Mary and Zuzu close, right. George smiles skyward and winks. Once again, the big bronze bell chimes, the end of this black and white movie.